Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
The internet is full of half-truths and all-out lies. We've all seen them, and many people on social media complaining about it. Here's your chance to show and prove. WorldAfropedia.com is a black-owned and operated encyclopedia. There are several thousand articles, but we need help. We can't uncover all the truth ourselves. So please, join us and become a writer, editor, or blogger for WorldAfropedia.com today. Every little bit counts. We owe it to the future generations to put the truth out there. Visit WorldAfropedia.com, the African-centered encyclopedia, a global database of African knowledge for the purpose of bringing about global African wisdom and understanding. WorldAfropedia.com.
We're going to hear next about a policy measure that a bunch of states are looking at to narrow the pay gap for women and minorities. It bars employers from asking job candidates about their salary history. California and Massachusetts recently adopted laws that do this. And this year, 25 states in the District of Columbia are considering such measures. NPR's Yuki Noguchi has more.
Aileen Rizzo was 4 years into her job as a math teaching consultant for Fresno County, California, when she found out a new male hire with less education and experience was offered a salary roughly 20% more than she was making.
I kind of knew that I had broken stereotypes as a mathematician and as the only full-time woman in that department. But then to find out that you're getting paid less than all of your male counterparts, that they all started much higher salary steps than you did, is just devastating.
Rizzo complained to Human Resources and was told her salary was set based on previous pay and that nothing would change. She was shocked, she says, and felt locked in.
I couldn't educate myself out of being paid less. I couldn't get more experience and be in the job market longer to break that cycle, because low wages will follow you wherever you go as long as someone keeps asking you how much you are paid.
Rizzo sued after that 2012 incident, arguing her employer violated the Equal Pay Act.
I have three young daughters, and I don't want them ever to feel that way.
Rizzo prevailed in lower court, but last month, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals overturned that ruling. Now she's considering an appeal to the Supreme Court.
After the Ninth Circuit decision, I felt like now it's black and white. You can pay a woman less. So I don't want that to be the end of the story.
In the years since Rizzo filed her case, Massachusetts, California, and New York City have passed or amended laws to ban employers from asking about previous salaries. Philadelphia's law is stayed pending litigation. Most of the measures have yet to take effect, so there's no data to show what impact they've had. Kevin Miller, a researcher at the American Association of University Women, says what is known is that college-educated women start out making 7% less than men a year after graduating. This is true comparing women and men who have similar levels of education, who might have majored in the same subjects and chose the same jobs or industries to work in. Miller says that gap tends to increase with age and is worse for minorities. Employers who set their own pay without union or government salary bans also tend to see greater pay disparities.
When you have more room to maneuver and more room to negotiate, I think that's where you see bias come in.
Rizzo's case prompted Congressional Delegate Eleanor Holmes Norton, representing Washington, D.C., to introduce federal legislation banning employers from asking about prior salary information. Holmes says her bill has support from only Democrats, but she's hoping to build broader support over time.
We don't sit here and say, look at the current Congress, why put this bill in? We do the opposite. I ask you to look at what you think the next Congress is going to look like.
Employer groups generally oppose these new measures, saying they add to businesses' administrative burdens. Nancy Hammer is Government Affairs Counsel for the Society for Human Resource Management. She says many employers ask about prior salary, but not in order to discriminate.
They don't want to waste the time of a candidate who's seeking a higher salary than they can offer.
Instead of telling employers they can't ask about salary history, she says policies should focus on encouraging businesses to audit, identify, and fix any internal pay gaps.
Right now, employers are hesitant to do that because it raises alarm bells that they were doing something wrong all along.
Most employers want to keep their workers happy and motivated, she says, so it's in their interest not to create big disparities in pay. Yuki Noguchi, NPR News, Washington.
World Nigga Law.
Edith, good morning.
Morning. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you, Edith. Thanks for calling in.
I'm so disillusioned. I am a colored female. I've been with a wonderful employer for the past 26 years. And most unfortunately, I still find myself in that very uncomfortable place of being disempowered as a female. We've got our very lovely empowering Employment Equity Act, but if it's not enforced, it means nothing. So if you as a female trying to get by with all the social aspects that you've got to deal with, the fact that you are constantly under attack, you don't know when you're safe and when you're not safe, guess what? You're not going to find any protection in a work environment. I've been placed in a unit where I work very lovely with my non-white people, and the next thing, I'm imposed upon by two white males. You know, these are males that are privileged. They could not find a real space for them in the organization, and then they usually end up at human capital management, the old HR. And these two were just placed with me. No meeting, no nothing. They were just put there. One I had to report to, one had to report to me. The one that had to report to me did not report to me because he said it simply, you're colored and you're female. Sorry, it's not going to happen. The next thing, I'm expected to report to this person that cannot write a report. He cannot compose or even manage a meeting properly. I have been with the organization for 26 years. There's nothing you can show me on a policy or conditions of service that I cannot do. And yet I was made to go to that disempowering place. My corporate, my workplace has become my prison now. You try and you let your voice heard. There's a process called a grievance. You put it in. You want somebody to listen. I am now at step three of a grievance. I've been through senior management level, all dominated by males, and every time the grievance is handled incorrectly. I'm finding myself sitting in this very frightened place. This is my employer. This is my daily bread. I'm raising a daughter by myself. I am a single parent of a single daughter. I cannot lose my job, but I cannot survive. I cannot be oppressed. Have you got any idea when you've got to be put on your place and you've got to be oppressed? You will do as they say. They will not listen. But at the end of the day, you deliver the product. At the end of the day, you do the work. One of my complaints is that my reports were plagiarized. My senior management takes my reports and puts his white friend's name on it, and it's fine. How 20 so what years later when I've moved away from that, and I'm still in a corporate place where I've worked hard and I've gone my way to get myself skilled, I'm still left disempowered. You are touching my dignity. You are touching my humanity. All I wanted was a job to feed my daughter. I don't know when South Africa wants to change, but this is a plight from a single parent, which is also an employee. I haven't defaulted you, employer, and I will not. But please stop defaulting me. That's all I have to say, honestly. I'm very emotional about this. This is a sore, painful issue. But if all that can hear out there, stop the discrimination against women. Just stop it. Corporate South Africa, look at your females that you employed and please do not do these things to them because you can.
Yo, we've been all around the world.
Been all around the world.
Our middle school coach says that he didn't get promoted for a job because of the color of his skin, and now he has filed a civil lawsuit against the York County school system.
News 3's Margaret Cavanaugh spoke to the students today about their former coach.
Calvin Williams used to be a coach and a teacher here at Queens Lake Middle School in Williamsburg, but he resigned, saying he was treated unfairly and discriminated against, according to this lawsuit. Former coach Calvin Williams claims in a lawsuit that two of his superiors were degrading and demeaning towards him in front of students and other staff. He says while working at the school, he faced racial discrimination. He claims to have been denied promotions and says his requests for uniforms and equipment for his teams were denied and claims to have been demoted. News 3 talked to some parents and students.
He was very nice, very caring, and cared about everybody on the team.
Sean Tracy says Williams coached and taught him last year.
He's awesome. If you had a problem, you could, like any sort of problem, you could go and talk to him.
He says he sensed tension.
And he kind of just got fed up with it and just picked up and left.
It states in the document that he was nominated for Teacher of the Year at the school in the spring of 2015 by his co-workers. Records indicate that Williams attempted to be transferred to another school, but was told that there were no open positions for him. He resigned and then stopped working in early January. His lawyer didn't go into specifics of the lawsuit, but said,
"We look forward to allowing the judicial system to run its course, and we look forward to Mr. Williams getting his day in court."
This school district issued a statement saying they don't comment on pending litigation, but did say the York County School Division does not discriminate on the basis of race, color, religion, national origin, sex, gender, age, or disability in its educational programs, activities, or employment. In Williamsburg, I'm Margaret Cavanaugh, News 3.
Context of white supremacy. Gus T. Renegade in for another broadcast, hopefully to share constructive information on the system of white supremacy. Today's date, Thursday, June 1, 2017. So I have been told we are almost at the one-year anniversary of us doing workplace racism as a separate program to itself. We started this time last year. In fact, I remember, I think we started the frickin' NBA Finals, which is starting today, started on the day we started the Workplace Racism Program, which was a week from today, next Thursday, June 8th. But we were competing with the finals when this first started, and lo and behold, we have remained on air long enough to be competing with the finals again. So we might have two callers if everyone has tuned out. Like I said, this is not about entertainment. So if you are tuning in for Workplace Racism for entertainment value, man, you can watch some basketball and white people's ball games, and I'm sure that will be a lot more entertaining than hear about how white people terrorize and abuse black people all over the world in the area of labor. But if you have concerns, problems, actually, first and foremost, if you have triumphs, if you have figured out any bits of counter-racist codification that help you avoid the type of problems that were mentioned in those audio clips, you get your promotions on time, get all of your raises, no problem, get flawless evaluations every time, and just beautiful office. If you need a transfer, you get it. No problems at all. You are just, you know, got the date on your calendar for when you decide you're gonna, you know, retire. But until then, it's easy sailing. You should be the first person to dial in and let us know, share some of the tips, because that's what we need. If you figured it out, if you're self-employed or if you work for white people, work for non-white people, and you figured out some helpful things, dial in the number 641-715-3640. The code 564-943. Pound. Press star 6 if you would like to participate. As always, if you have issues, problems, would like input, would like to hear listeners or different ideas about how you can go about dealing with the situation, always welcome that sharing from listeners, and you know, we can offer our views. The number 641-715-3640. The code again, 564-943-pound. Press star 6 if you would like to participate. As always, if you do not want to dial in via phone, or if you're not able to, you can email. If you want to remain anonymous, I know some people have concerns that their voice might be recognized or what have you. You can always drop us an email and we'll read it on the air if you either have an opinion, have a view on what's been shared, or if you have a situation that you're dealing with that you want to share and then get listeners' comments on. The email address, untiljustice@gmail.com. Untiljustice@gmail.com, and we'll read it on the air. Some people have already written comments in. I'll make sure I get those as we proceed through the broadcast, and then I'll keep my eye on my email as we are broadcasting. So if you share live comments, we'll include them before we conclude. I just wanted to say quickly about the audio segments that we began with. Really powerful segment. The non-white female caller in South Africa talking about the abuse that she encounters from white males on the job. And I mean, so much of what she said in terms of the white people that they hire don't listen to her. She's got all this experience. I think she said she'd been working there for a quarter century, right? 25 years. And getting a white person, they come in, they don't want to listen to her. They don't want to report to her. They plagiarize her work, put some white guy's name on the top of her report that she authored, standard operating procedure. And for real, this is world nigger law, racism, white supremacy. This is how it, these are similar things that whites do all over the universe in the area of labor. I know a lot of folks, probably some people listening to this call right now, can relate to that if you haven't experienced it or witnessed it directly. I know those are things that we've talked about on this program regularly. The pattern of white people not listening to a black person who is competent and is quote unquote in charge or a supervisor or whatever it is, and they still don't listen to you, or they find ways to subvert and sabotage your quote unquote authority all the time. I've heard Mr. Fuller talk about this for years. Again, I hope these types of patterns just further reinforce what it means to be white anywhere on the planet. Grand. Also, the pay disparity, I thought that was interesting as well. I think one of the ways that white people practice racism very effectively, you heard it in the last clip as well, it'll be an incident about racism, white supremacy. White women make more than black males. Okay, we're not talking about some gender disparity. We're talking about the system of racism, white supremacy, and how that ends up impacting labor, economics, what your salary is, what your compensation is on the job, period. No matter how well you do your job, no matter how long you've been there. And they'll find some way of weaving in sexual orientation and ageism and ableism and anything else to make sure that we dilute the conversation so that it's not about white supremacy. I said you heard that in that final clip as well. Black male educator ends up leaving the job because of racism. How many of us has that happened to? And then he's filing a lawsuit. You want to make sure you have a lot of data there. I don't know if he did, but that's why I always encourage documentation. Take detailed notes so that you have dates and times of specific things that were said, done to you, so that you can have lots and lots of evidence if you know you have to pursue anything like that. But they said at the end, oh yeah, the school said, you know, we take these sort of allegations seriously, and we do not tolerate any sort of racism or sexism or age. And then they list, you know, everything. I thought they were going to say we don't tolerate people with glasses being hit either. The last thing I wanted to get in, and then we'll get to folks who called in, or I guess two quick things. I'll see if I can get two of the comments that people wrote in. First one, Cynical African, longtime listener, investor, guest on the program, cynicalafrican.com, not in the United States, cynicalafrican.com. But he has shared many, many workplace racism incidents down through the years. Shared a racist joke that he overheard on the job. If you work with... Oh, wait a minute. Sorry, I messed up the joke. What do you do when you see a black person bleeding profusely and agonizing in your backyard? You stop laughing and reload. Racist jokes. Very common in the workplace. Anybody who follows Gus on Facebook, and my Facebook page is facebook.com/theproblemiswhitepeople. But if you follow on Facebook, you'll see the image for today's broadcast. It's an image of what I believe is a race soldier, someone who'd be accepted as white. He's holding a gorilla. He's talking about how he was abused on the job. He said that he was teased. They said that he had some sort of black ancestry, as they say, and his coworkers found out, and white coworkers found out and proceeded to menace and terrorize him. They would leave little gorillas around the office and all such types of tackiness. But yeah, the racist jokes in the workplace, they tend to be prolific. So just I would just make a note. I wouldn't, you know, wig out and come in with my Louis Farrakhan shirt or anything like that. I would just, you know, write down what they said. In fact, if I overheard it, I might even just write it down and say, Bob, can you say that one more time? Wowee. And write it down. Okay, thanks so much, sir. And just proceed about the day like nothing ever happened. Just put that in your note. That's what I said about having extensive documentation. Okay, other people wrote in as well. I'll make sure I get these in as we proceed. And if other folks, if you want to write, if you want to share, untiljustice@gmail.com. Okay. So this person wrote in, non-white female. She says, speaking of the final, she says she's born in Cleveland, transplanted to Nevada. She ended up moving to Nevada after the company I worked for moved their corporate office from Ohio to Texas after a six-month break from corporate white America. I'm back on the plantation, a cubicle. Let's see. I recently started working for a national court reporting firm working in the billing department. The room in which we sit holds two different departments, calendar and billing. The calendar department is made up of all white females, ick, including their supervisor. The billing department has a white female supervisor, one white female, one Asian Filipino female, a self-described Blasian female, a dark-skinned non-white Mexican male, a light-skinned non-white Mexican female, and our writer. She's a non-white female. I started off with the suggested and correct codified behavior of politeness, making sure to speak to everyone each morning as I entered. That is until I noticed after about 2 weeks of greeting these people that no one said good morning to me unless I initiated the greeting. Speaking of greetings, there's a non-white male videographer who makes it a point daily to individually greet all of the white people and the Asian woman on my team in our shared office. After about 3 weeks of observation, I noticed that he particularly does not say hello, goodbye, or otherwise to me, the Blasian, or the two Mexicans. To be sure, I tested this. Very recently, I said hello when there was just two of us passing each other in the hall. He still did not say hello, even when I initiate the greeting. He just looks at me through squinted eyes and keeps walking, not even a fake smile. Question, since moving west, or at least to Nevada, I noticed there are a lot of non-white, victims? I don't know, this just sounds like a little bit of confusion, so I'll address her question later. Because I just started in this position, any work I produce is being quality checked. I started off with my work being checked by the supervisor. Most 80% of the invoices produced came back from her with approval to post. The supervisor recently assigned the Blasian female to check my work. I have noticed that almost 90% of the invoices I send to her to be checked come back with feedback and non-approval to post. I also noticed that the Blasian female often gives conflicting information. As soon as I noticed this, I began to email questions to keep documentation. On the emails with conflicting information, I started copying the supervisor. The conflicting advice has since stopped from the Blasian female. Outstanding use of email. We've really emphasized that on the program. Many of our listeners have as well. Using emails where you can CC, blind CC, you can send it to a lot. You really could send it to everybody if you wanted to, but you can send the email to other people. That can really be helpful in resolving these types of problems and other issues. Just really being intelligent with the use of your email. Outstanding work. Continuing. Last week, I wore a dress that some would describe as Native American inspired. I walked in this particular morning and did not say good morning. This was about the time I began to observe that I was initiating all greetings. There's a white female who works in calendar that sits behind me and comes in later in the morning. When she walked in and got to her cubicle, another white female said, "Jumbo." J-A-M-B-O. And they both started giggling. I remembered Jambo being a greeting in Swahili or Kenyan and learning this back when Kwanzaa was being promoted in the elementary schools. They may have assumed I couldn't hear their joke, whoo, because I often sit at my desk with earbuds in my ears to listen to music. I've now started to just put them in my ears to listen to what is going on around me and so that I look like I don't want to be bothered. If someone does not want to interact with their white coworkers, this strategy works. If you are listening to something on your phone, also recommend placing your phone face down. After the joke, I have stopped all attempts of politeness and greeting. All greetings come in email form only to those people I have to communicate with. Also, we have a team meeting. During this team meeting, the supervisor put on a general warning to the team. She allows the team to listen to music as a privilege, but she has been warned that there is an increased internet usage and reports of people watching videos. I often listen to previously recorded Cal's Workplace Racism and other broadcasts while working. I use the unlimited internet plan that I purchased through my cell phone provider to listen to those videos. I was assigned the last cubicle where no one can see me when they walk in or out. So the only person that would have been reported someone watching videos is the white female that sits directly behind me. I previously heard a suggestion to have a mirror on your desk to prevent people from spying or sneaking up on you. I will be purchasing one today. Comments and suggestions are welcome. She said she can be referred to as Wild Rice. Wow, lots of great things here. I guess one thing that I would say, and I remember this from Dr. Kanban, where he talked about not saying good morning or good afternoon, just removing the good and just saying morning, afternoon. But even beyond that, I remember, and I think Mr. Edward Williams said this. He said that, you know, war is being waged against us, the system of white supremacy. Absolutely. That's true. Even the folks that we're with on the job that are classified as white, them too. Absolutely. However, job situation, you're not necessarily greeting any of these people, at least my perspective on this. You're not necessarily greeting, acknowledging any of these people that you might be around, like sitting in very intimate space with 40 hours a week, sometimes more than that. It's not, I am, you know, looking for something. I'm expecting something. I'm not doing this, you know, out of really any reason other than just this is workplace politeness. I think we talked about this concept before, where I'm just being cordial because we're on the job. That's it. This is not we're cool, we're homies. I'm not expecting any form of reciprocity. It's not a major output of energy. And really, to me, it strikes me as, you know, hey, I might want to be careful around this person. Just someone, period, on the job who does not acknowledge people that you are around 30, 40, 50 hours a week, and you don't even give a head nod to these people. Like, that kind of stands out as kind of strange. Like, I do that to people. I've done that with people on the job that I don't even particularly like, but just we're here and I'm just acknowledging your presence and we keep it moving. Like, I think that can be very effective. And particularly because so many non-white people, myself included, have been accused of being quiet, aloof, doesn't seem like you're part of our family, you don't talk anything, all of that nonsense. So I think just speaking, and again, you don't have to, it doesn't have to be a conversation. You're not trying to find out what they had for breakfast or what their plans are for the weekend, who they think is going to win the morning, afternoon, Eve, that's all you have to say. And you keep it pushing. And I've told this to people individually, and for some people, they, you know, opposed a little bit because they, and I feel you, you know, if the person doesn't, I am curmudgeon. I don't like anybody. I feel you completely. But I just think in terms of just having a business code, this is just a part of being a, I am a professional counter-racist. This is not any sort of, you know, acknowledgement of a bond of friendship. This is just acknowledging we're in the same building together for 34 hours a week. I'm just acknowledging your presence and moving on to my next task. Also with the first part, what she was talking about, being around so many racist females, dangerous environment, just something I would definitely be mindful of. I always think it's great to have the mirror if you're in that sort of environment where you already have reason to suspect that you're being spied on or watched, which you should if you work with white people and maybe even some victims, unfortunately. But that can be a great tool just so that you can increase your visibility periphery vision, right? You'll increase your field of vision. You'll know what's going on. I think a lot of people have commented that white people have been sneaking up on them at work to pull pranks or try to startle them, and that's what, or even to do some sort of unwanted touching. So great tool. Also the earbuds, I think that is outstanding. A lot of people have mentioned that as well. I think Mr. Steele, Roz, quite a few other folks, in terms of putting the earbuds in, but you don't have anything on. That way you can hear what's happening around you. And I think some people have even noticed that sometimes whites will be a little casual with their dialogue if they think you're not listening, and they might say some things where you can hear, pick up some great information, almost kind of like what do white people talk about when there are no non-white people around. Great tool. I would recommend that as well. And yeah, I would even recommend if you do listen, if it's music or if it's constructive information, I would recommend keeping the volume low enough that you can still hear what's happening around you. I don't think you want to be in a work environment where you're listening to something and it's so loud that you can't really hear what's happening around you. Just suggestion. I'll stop there. The number again, 641-715-3640, the code 564-943-pound. Press *6 if you would like to participate. And I will emphasize one more time, this is not the Spectator broadcast. Definitely, you got a great option today. I think Scandal, I don't know if Scandal season is over yet, so you might have to do reruns, but you certainly can watch the basketball contest. So if you're just looking for entertainment, but this is something where, hey, we should have a lot of folks who are able to participate. Certainly, we can always reflect on our work history, times when we were more confused about racism and things that happened that we maybe didn't understand accurately because we were more confused about racism, what it is and how it works. That's always important. And I think just in general, it's great to share and to follow up if you've called in previously, shared an incident or what have you, and then you've been able to employ counter-racist techniques. You see what happened. You can give us the result. That helps us all get better in understanding what works, what doesn't in the workplace. Folks that dialed in with a hand up, line should be open. Feel free.
Hello?
Yes, ma'am.
Hi, good evening. I wanted to talk about the quote-unquote good times. But I guess if you were wrong, talk about that. You said that you had good times. Talk about those. And I guess it didn't start off so great, maybe because of the pay disparity. And a lot of times we're not taught to negotiate for salaries. So that part was bad. But, you know, whatever. So, but I got there. I worked with this company right out of college about 4 years. Everything was pretty okay. I got, you know, the raises, like you said. I was able to move over. I got a promotion. The lady who promoted me to a new position, she was black. And she gave me the highest rate she could based on my salary. Because somehow I found out the salary spreadsheet or something. And she gave me the best she could. So, you know, she did that. And I did my job. I didn't have any problems. Now, I can say I didn't do what we normally talk about, you know, just saying hello. I was very friendly. They were friendly to me. We would all go out because it was Tuesday. Yay, it's Tuesday. Let's go out to lunch. We're thirsty. Let's all go get some water. I don't know. I got along maybe because there was more black people around in general. But I didn't have any problems. Like I said, I did a project on my own. I got recognized for that. The last boss I had, she was a white lady. And she said that they weren't giving anybody raises, but she gave me one. And then they had to, then there was some big changeover. So they had to cut everybody. So I got cut. But then I did something. I don't know what I did. I did something, and she gave me a bonus, and that covered the cut. So I got it. It got taken away, but then I ended up getting it again. They had groups like diversity groups. I was like in the Black diversity group, the women diversity group, whatever. I went to work. I did my job. I participated in holiday functions and all of that. I didn't have any problems. And when they were transitioning our job to the other company, there was an African-American young lady. She was nice. She did a good job. And I guess she did a really good job because they, instead of laying her off, there's this white guy in my department. They laid him off and gave her the job. So she was obviously doing something right. So they laid off the white guy and gave the black girl the job. So it started off so good. I had a good 4 years. So.
Wow. Did you leave voluntarily?
Well, what happened was they outsourced the positions. So certain people got to stay, certain people got to go to the other company, then some people got laid off entirely. I went to the other company. Then there was this older black lady. They won't lay her, well, they did end up laying her off entirely, but they allowed her to stay on long enough so she could get her benefits. So they weren't just like, oh, bye. And maybe she had a few more months or, I don't know, enough time. They gave her enough time. Now, they did that more than once throughout the company to a few other black people I heard of. They let them stay long enough to get their benefits, and then they, quote, unquote, laid them off.
Oh, I see. Well, that still seems very...
Yeah, I think it was just environment. Because I went to other places in the same city. It was just a different environment. And I don't know.
We had another illustration then where they tricked Gus one more time with seeming like they were done with their commentary. But what I was going to say was just that is, you said you were there for about 4 years. That seems very much in line with the racist strategy for the workplace. So that even if it looks like things are going great and you get along with the people that you work with, you say, hey, I'm getting along and I'm getting, you know, the maximum bonus that I can and hanging out with people and it's friendly and great, no problems. It's not designed for us to have that sort of job for 25 years. Just kind of what I was saying, it's just not set up for that. It's kind of set up for maybe you can get a 1 year run at that sort of thing. Maybe you get a 6 month run at that sort of thing. I mean, 4 years is even kind of like, wow. But oh yeah, it's designed to make sure that black people are not able to keep those types of positions or have those types of careers where you can just have stable, enjoyable, productive employment and not all, you know, the conflict and nonsense and tackiness that we generally have to experience worldwide. But
I can also say that the friends that I made there, you know, the black ones, they still work there. And even the headquarters church moved from one state to another, and they kept their jobs and went to, they want, you know, they moved to Georgia, and they wanted to move to Georgia, and they moved to Georgia. Like I said, I can already tell you what I know.
Mm-hmm.
If there were complaints, you know, I didn't hear about them. They weren't widespread. Like I said, there was an organization. There were quite a few black people, because this is a Fortune 500 company. There were a few black people who had, you know, decent level, what they call, I guess, C-suite type jobs or whatever. So I don't know, maybe they had some influence or whatever it was, I never, you know, no big racism complaints. You know, you have the normal everyday this and other blah, blah, blah. But I don't.
Okay.
I don't remember it.
Got you.
I can tell you what I know.
Yes, ma'am. I appreciate the detail and just reiterate what I said before. It might be great, outstanding, but limited. At least it seems for you and some other people who were laid off, quote unquote, what have you. Even the people, I guess, if they were nice enough to allow them to stay to get their benefits or what have you. It seems like for a lot of black people at that job, even there, it was a temporary situation, which, as I stated, by design in the system of racism, white supremacy. Hang on one second. Other people that dialed in who we have not heard from at all, if you have commentary that you would like to share, feel free.
Have you heard?
Yes, sir.
Hey, good evening, Gus. Good evening to all of the callers. 2812 from Virginia. A couple of observations. couple of different things that happened. I mentioned a couple of weeks ago, probably a couple of months ago, I'm on a quote unquote leadership team, whatever that means, for a lead share group. And I'm the only non-white person, black person in the group. And so we had a meeting a couple of weeks ago, and in the meeting, what we were talking about was me and three other people, because the group is getting smaller because of lack of attendance. And one of the things I pointed out was I said, you know, we have people that come to these meetings and they talk about everybody supporting the group, but, you know, they don't get insurance from you. They don't do a mortgage with me, and they don't do all. So, and I said, you have one person that literally consistently does this all the time. And I said, you guys have known this individual for longer than I have, and I said, it would be better if you pointed out or say something about it, because he consistently does this. And this is the same individual that also had made some comments about an area in the area of Virginia that I live that you knew he was just talking about non-white people being ratchet and ghetto. So we get to the meeting today, and in the meeting, he starts talking about his second home or whatever that he's building in another state. And he starts complaining about the mortgage company he's working with. And the moment he starts doing that, everybody's eyes start to look at me, because this is exactly what I just mentioned. And I said, well, maybe, you know, my brain, I'm like, well, this is what I told you guys. He wouldn't be having these experiences if he would deal with professionals such as ourselves or whatever. So long story short, he's in there being and moaning and complaining, and I know the guy. I know the company that they're complaining about. I know the guy. All suspected racist. And mind you, I'm still the only black person, but I know everybody. And so I'm like, yeah, that company, you know, they have poor customer service. He was like, yeah, they're terrible. And you know, I should have just called Quicken Loans. And everybody looks at me because they're again saying, this guy still will not acknowledge that he didn't use me, or he should have even attempted to use me. So finally he goes on his little it was just non-constructive rant about his whole experience. And he says, yeah, you know, I respect everybody in the room, and, you know, these are the people that I'll be using in the future. And so I just looked at him and said, oh, okay, that's good to know. And I left the meeting, and a white woman walks up to me and she says, no, I think you're right. I mean, this guy, he doesn't use any of us for anything. And I said, yes, he's just wasting time. And so they're all suspected racists in that particular room. But I think the main reason why I brought that up is because, you know, white supremacy and racism, they don't care. They will snipe each other's head off or anything. But when it comes to a black person, they were specifically, and that's how I felt being in a meeting, that he was like, I'm going to do anything but support this nigger. But that's just my opinion. And I could be wrong. I rented a car today, had a good experience with another victim. He was driving me to another location, and he mentioned something, and I try to do as best as I can to possibly mention racism when I get a chance to. And so he mentioned something about going somewhere on his job, and I was like, have you ever experienced any racism here on a job? And he was like, man, all the time. And I just started laughing, and we just had a really good constructive conversation. He was talking about not getting pulled over and things of that nature, and being careful for racist suspects, you know, in the area of law enforcement. And it's always just good to have a constructive conversation about racism. And then one other thing that I wanted to mention was my fiance's mother is a Caribbean woman. And what I always find really constructive, I'm learning for myself, thanks to the previous conversations that I hear from Mr. Fuller, and also I listen to a lot of Gus's old programs about asking questions. And so she's in her later years, but asking questions is important. And I like to ask questions about work history. I'm not delving off, Gus, trust me. And I asked her, I said, well, can you tell me your first experience with racism when you got into the United States? And it seems like every time I ask this question, particularly to older African-American women in the Caribbean, they give me the same answer. She stated, I came to this country when I was 19 or 20. I moved out, I got a job working for a white family on the island. And after 6 months, one of their sons tried to unlock the door because she was staying there. She was doing a housekeeper and tried to sexually attack me. And that sounded like from the warmth of other sons, and that sounded like other books and other things that we've read or heard other non-white people talk about on this program pretty frequently, is that we don't really understand the terrorism that a lot of us or a lot of our family members have gone through, because we really don't ask questions. And these are experiences that are in the back of their minds. But I don't necessarily think that it was a negative thing to me talking about it, because I said that happens to a lot of women. And she said, you are absolutely right, because after the story, she told me that her friend, when she brought it to her attention, the woman that referred her to the job that quit said, oh, yeah, you got to watch out for the young white guy. And so I'm just sitting there imagining how many other women that this happens to, not only in housekeeping jobs. My grandmother was a housekeeper, but in any sort of position. So I had mentioned a couple of weeks ago about being a hostage, and that's literally what we are in the system of racism and white supremacy, and we just need to remember that. And a lot of times that when we're experiencing some of these feelings, either as a woman or as a male, or if you're feeling fearful or anything of that nature, the code book says that is classified as terrorism. And so you could say, I've just felt terrorism at the job, and that's what I say to myself, and I would advise other victims to do the same. And thanks if I went over my time. Appreciate it, guys.
Wow. That is, I talk about that. So it seems like you had lots of robust, profound, nourishing exchanges with other black people just around workplace racism, which I submit can be happening all the time, because all of us have had such traumatic and, you know, just really pivotal moments in terms of the abuse that we've experienced with work. And I think just being able to process that with someone who, you know, might be sympathetic and who might have a similar experience, where you all can, you know, kind of really relate around, you know, having this experience of trauma. But that's one. I think a lot of us could get that if we, particularly speaking, you know, with parents, grandparents, aunts, uncles, older family members, older friends, whatever it is, but just asking them, you know, about asking them those types of questions. I think a lot of older black people, you would be amazed at some of the types of experiences that they could share, particularly dealing with the workplace. I also, with your own personal situation and having this racist come in and just, you know, waste your time, and he's not going to use you for the financing, he's not going to use you all services. That sort of thing is so common. And I was just talking about that's one of the major ways that white people practice racism, white supremacy, in terms of wasting our time. They do this so much. And I think we just have been victimized, so we don't recognize that they're wasting our time. Dr. John Henry Clark said that. He said that's one regret that he has. Nobody has infinite time. You cannot afford to have people just wasting your time to do nothing. They have no intent on using your services. This is not going to benefit you at all. You're not going to get a shilling. You're not going to get a nickel out of any of this. And I can sit here and act and, oh man, these folks are terrible, I should have used Quaker. I'm not going to use this nigga for nothing. I'm just in here putting on a racial theater, and I'm wasting this nigga's time. They do this sort of, and it comes in a variety of different ways. Were you going to add something, sir?
No, I appreciate that. And I wanted to just ask you, was I incorrect? Wasn't there a similar story in The Warmth of Other Suns about one of the characters was approached sexually by the white male, and one of her friends either warned her or didn't warn her? Is that accurate?
Ida Mae Gladney. Ida Mae Gladney.
Yep.
It was in
Same
Chicago.
Story, guys. Same story. Yep.
In Chicago, we talked about it before. Isabel Wilkerson, The Warmth of Other Suns, top five book for Gus. It's in the archives. But yeah, Ida Mae Gladney, that was her situation. She was in Chicago. She was filling in. It wasn't even her job. She was filling in for her friend's job, working at this white family's house. The white husband tried to sexually molest her. She stormed out, and her friend did not tell her. Her friend knew that this sort of thing was happening, was probably being terrorized herself, and did not warned her. And it seemed, if I'm remembering correctly from the text, it seemed that she thought that this was funny, that this had happen. So again, just ask lots of questions, be informed today, and asking relatives, I think, is really important, or just other Black people being able to have those conversations about what we've gone through on the workplace can be critical. Other folks, if you want to share your own situation, or if you have questions, comments about what you've heard thus far, lines should be open. Feel free.
May I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Hello, this is Red from Ohio. Hello, everyone. I have just some observations that I've been trying to be less confused. It seems like I'm not really able to find any good observations. I guess, actually, let me take that back. I do have one, and then I do have a question of how to deal with another victim, a Black female at my job. I've spoken about her before. Well, the only good thing that I can say is that in the area that I work in, there are mainly females on the team, and there's only a few males. One is a homosexual male. The other one is another non-white male. The rest of the team, which is basically, I would say, about 80% of the team is females or women, non-white females and white women. Of course, the main issue is the white women just got onto the team, feel like they know basically everything, and continuously mess things up. The only good thing that I can say is that one of the other non-white Black females on my team, I have actually been reaching out to her more if she needs help. And I feel like I've maybe finally gained her trust, because before, when I would offer to help her out, she'd always say no, she was fine. And now I'm kind of helping her out more, and she seems like she seems as if she's a little bit more relieved about it, not being under so much stress. The issues, or what I can see, the thing that I notice now is how these suspected racists, they are definitely liars, of course, but they frame it in a way, they will tell you a lie in the most truthful type of way. And I know that that sounds really confusing, but it's really hard to kind of explain it, because my new supervisor, he said, you know what, I really don't like to micromanage the team. I really just like for everybody to just be able to do their own thing, and that kind of makes the situation a lot better, builds up rapport and everything. And he has done the complete opposite. If you are working on something, he wants you to stop what you're doing and work on something else. And I'm assuming that he does this to the whole team, because like when he sends out these memos, it does have everyone included, but I'm not sure if everyone is actually really paying attention to it. I try to pay attention to it, or I make sure that I do what they say, because of course they can fire me at any point. And I just keep going back to the fact of what I've learned from the Cals, is that to relieve all ownership of the job that I currently have, not my computer, not my work, not this, it's the work that they assign me to take care of. And so that has helped me out tremendously. The only issue that I am having is with another non-white Black female. I've tried to help her out in the past, and I feel like I'm really fighting back anti-Black feelings. Now, helping out this other Black female, that's helped me out so much to where I'm not so angry with the other one. But it's just that she's not really paying close enough attention to her job. And I definitely know that it is the suspected racist to blame, because she would not be there if they were really paying attention or really trying to help her, she's only there because of them. So, but my main issue is that I'm seeing now that I have to go back behind her and fix her work, or I have to take over work that she was supposed to do. So it is kind of getting a little frustrating, and I know sometimes I'm short with her, and so I just maybe just want some suggestions of just how to deal with that. That's all I have for now. Thank you.
That is great. I think that's logical. I know, you know, a lot of people, a lot of black people may disagree with my view on that, and that's fine. You know, United Independent, but I think that's logical, and I think that's correct, the perspective that you took about the non-white person who's working there, who's not up to par in terms of her work performance, and saying that, hey, this is racist, I'm most to blame. They are responsible for her working here. You know, they, if she's not up to the job, then they shouldn't have hired her to begin with. I think that's, it's accurate, and I think that's, that it makes sense, even though I know some people may disagree. I guess you could speak with her directly. No, that's something I try to advocate. If people are having any sort of issue with a non-white person on the job, it, to the degree that you can, if it's possible, to try to address it with them directly. And it could be broached. I don't know if this person would be receptive. I don't know what type of rapport you have with her or not. No, it seemed, I don't know if maybe you have been a little impatient with her or not, since you've been having to kind of clean up things that she's not doing correctly. You could address it with her as a training issue. Just, you know, if she's starting out on a new job and there might be some tips and just additional information to help her do her job more efficiently, which helps everyone out. That way I don't have to, you know, come back to address something that you did or that sort of thing. Is that possible, where she could get retrained?
See, that's the thing. I have been, just recently I pointed something out to her, and it seems like it's just not being received. And I've tried, you know, the training route. And the thing is that she's been with the company longer than I have been, maybe of, I don't know, several years or what have you. So, and I've been trying to just really try to frame it in a way to where, you know, I'm not making it seem as if I'm being condescending or if I know more than her, even though I've been in this, in the area that I'm at longer. But it's just that I don't quite know how to get through to her. And I'm not, I don't, I hope this is a name calling, but I feel like she's kind of vacuous. It's not quite sinking in. So that's just one of the issues. I'm not sure she can truly tell that I'm really being short with her. Like, sometimes when I have to go inside the building, and if I see her, I kind of won't look at her because I'm still a little bit upset. If she says hello, of course I'll still say hello and try to be polite, but it's not something that I'll go out of my way to do. So that's the only thing.
Okay. So just so that I make sure I'm understanding correctly, maybe listeners as well, you think that the problem with this person is not that she necessarily is a slacker or what have you. The problem is that she is not understanding, that you try to explain things, and it seems like she is just not, for whatever reason, she is just not understanding this at all.
I'm trying to actually figure that out, because I don't know, because she seems like, I don't know if it might be just a learning disorder that she might have had throughout her whole life, or if sometimes, you know how it's, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to say you know how, but there are sometimes when you explain something to people and they're like, oh no, I already know that. And, but then it's like, on the other hand, they'll do things to where if you explain the procedure, they already know it. But when it comes time to actually put the procedure in action, it's executed incorrectly, if I'm making any sense.
I see. That is interesting. You certainly could go to your supervisor. I know it's been my experience, white people, sometimes they can resolve these situations to get it so that the work is being done correctly or what have you. Sometimes they could just say, oh, we'll get rid of this non-white person. And, you know, that I generally try to see if, you know, we can avoid that sort of thing. But, you know, if she's not able to do the work and it's, you know, adversely impacting your work experience, then that is something that does happen in a lot of work environments where people, you know, if they're not able to do the job adequately, if they're not able to correct that. Any any listeners have suggestions on how you might go about dealing with the situation where it seems like you've tried to go and address whatever her deficiencies are. You've tried to go and do that in a polite, patient manner, but it's happening regularly. And I guess maybe even she's saying at times that, oh, yes, I understand this. I understand this. I've been working here longer than you. She might not be saying that, but she has been working there longer than you. And then the problems continue to happen. Any listeners have suggestions about how you might go about dealing with this problem, particularly if you can avoid having to pull in white people? Any listeners have suggestions?
Yes, sir. Can I be heard?
Yes, sir. Retired firefighter.
Yes. I would quietly go about the means of if I don't haven't already established a relationship with that non-white person, I would develop one in a very quiet way and work with that person up until the point to whereas my situation would be jeopardized. And I will let that person know. I will let that person know all of that ahead of time, that non-white person ahead of time. It reminds me of when it comes to swimming. You have two people, and one person is trying to help the other. But if the person that is being helped is to the point to where they actually are jeopardizing the safety of the person who can swim, then that person needs to back off. So the similar situation within a job situation, because it could happen. It could happen, you know, as far as that concern. And you just do it in a quiet way as much as possible. I've had experiences like that myself with other non-white employees. And for the most part, that non-white person knows of their inadequacies. They're very much aware of it. You know, in a lot of cases, I have found out. I put it that way from my experience. I found out they're very much aware where they're short at. You know, or if it was something as far as their own behavior itself, they're very much aware of it. And that's my suggestion. Thank you.
I dig the emphasis, making sure you let that non-white person know, you know, at the point where, hey, this is at this point, you know, this issue is jeopardizing my employment at this, you know, at our business here. And, you know, I might have to involve whomever else to try to get this problem solved. I think same approach. I think I've said before, if it gets to a point where you have to involve a white person, like letting the non-white person know, like, hey, this is what the problem is. I'm trying as best I can to see if, you know, we can just solve it between us. And if that's not possible, then I'm gonna have to involve white people to get this taken care of. Like, I always think that's a great way to go. Any other suggestions for how you might remedy this issue? Non-white person who seems to have some major problems being able to competently do their work, and it's impacting Red, our non-white female caller here, impacting her ability to do her job, and she's having to take time to make these corrections and what have you. Any suggestions on how you'd address the situation? It is a tough one, I know.
May I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. In addressing that situation, I was in that same situation myself. So how I had to go about it was I had to actually get somebody else involved in it because, like a retired firefighter was saying, they can drag you down and end up jeopardizing, you know, your job as well. So my thing is, if you're out there and you are telling them and you're showing them and they have that cocky attitude that they're not willing to learn, you just have to sometimes charge that to the game and just have to do what you have to do. Because I've known when I've dealt with that situation and I've tried to have a personal, you know, one-on-one relationship, like, you know, just to try to figure them out or just be, you know, on the level where we could see eye to eye. And they turned around to be a snitch. So it was certain things that I know was in jeopardy, like it wasn't in jeopardy of my job, but it was certain things that they would say to other people on the job that I knew, like, okay, what's going on here? And I know, like, when somebody is not doing their job well, they'll throw you under the bus to make sure that they keep their job. So those type of people are very dangerous, and I don't really, I try to work with, you know, my people. Some of them, they get it. They'll try to work with you. And some of them, they just have that cocky attitude where they just don't want to work with you, and they're going to keep doing what they're doing, and you just have to walk away from it. And I'll mute my line.
Appreciate that. That is the workplace. You know, I've said that before. I think some people, not just in the workplace, but I have heard it within this context a lot as well. And it's come up on the program where people, they are on a job. And, you know, just because this person has a lot of melanin, it's like, oh, this is, you know, my sister. This is my brother. You know, this is a part of my family. And, you know, it's not that I'm saying that you have to be rude or discourteous to the person, but I'm just saying that that's not the case. You know, frequently in these job situations, racists, they're very manipulative, and they have everybody in a vulnerable position. No one wants to lose their job, their source of income. So they frequently can, you know, get non-white people and have them in conflict with other non-white people and have them, you know, snitch on other non-white people and that sort of things to just make it so that we don't get along with each other in that work environment. So definitely be courteous as you can, be helpful to the degree that you can, but this is the plantation. We are behind enemy lines, and primarily it's going to be united independent. If a non-white person is doing something and you've tried, you've exhausted all strategies, you've tried, you've been patient, you've talked with them, and you feel like you got to involve white people, that might be what you have to resort to. And again, I just say, if you can let that person know, like, hey, if there's anything, if you can think of something, some way that we can resolve this problem without having to involve them, great. If not, I'm going to have to tell, you know, such and such. Yeah. Any other suggestions? I guess just to ask, have you involved white people at all, Red, in this situation? Or have you just been trying to kind of do it solo, do it yourself, dealing with this other victim?
Well, actually, no, I have not involved white people, and that was the thing, because I spoke a while back about a white woman who was doing the same thing. I immediately involved other whites, and of course, nothing happened. But with this female, and I definitely appreciate the suggestion. So, like, what I'm going to try to do, and I don't try to pry in the person's business, but I noticed that she's gone through, like, a name change. So I don't know if maybe she's gotten married or gotten divorced. So I think maybe what I'm going to try to do is just try one more time. If that doesn't work, then I'll go ahead and involve, of course, the suspected racist boss who knows if they'll do anything, or a supervisor. I appreciate the suggestions, and I'll keep everyone updated.
Appreciate that. And again, that time wasting, that's just, in my opinion, that's something we should be very cognizant about, because in the work environment, it's been my experience, white people, they are very conscious about how people use their time. They got these devices now where they track how many seconds you were in the restroom, and, you know, how much time you spend on websites that are not related to your job. And, you know, did you take exactly 29 minutes and 59 seconds for your 30-minute lunch break? I mean, they got all kinds of, you know, gadgets to track time and to make sure that the time theft and what have you. They got different little terms and things that they put on it to suggest that you're stealing company time or paper clips or whatever else, but specifically focusing on time. They're very conscientious about time. We should be, too, about our time. And white people, non-white people, anybody, we should really look out for that, and particularly on the job, because they'll do that a lot of times. Have you wasting time for other white people not doing their job, other victims not doing their job, all of these things. And then when you have your evaluation and they look at your productivity or how efficient you were, sometimes that's being compromised because other people are not doing their job, and that's pulling you down. So just be mindful of that how time and energy is used. Other folks, if you have commentary, suggestions, feel free.
I was hearing you earlier speak about your time on the job is not filled with a lot of pleasantness for the most part, and I'm in total agreement of that. I was on one job for over 25 years, and yes, you would always try to seek the most pleasant situation, the environment that you could possibly be in. Every now and then that would take place. With the fire department, you know, you were on for 24 hours. And also with the fire department, you can bid what they call bid a station. And you can practically stay there for almost your entire time, if not your entire time on the job, if that's what you choose to do, if you don't want to get promoted or anything like that. But rarely teams of guys would stay together for long periods of time. And even so, you may have a situation where a person is out sick or have transferred in, and then boop, there goes. There's that white person in his place. And it's like, you know, you don't even want to be there. Sometimes you just have to gut it out and hang in there for the 24 hours. It was certain people that if I showed up to work and I saw them there, I would just say, hey, I don't feel well. I'm gonna leave. I would leave for the day if I wasn't really with it. You know, putting up with that person for 24 hours, because I know me, I know, you know, things would get worse for me if I lost the sense of counter-racist discipline. I'm going to call it that, counter-racist discipline. So, yeah, those things are very important, very important. You always have to have your mind right. Get your mind right. It's almost like getting ready for war or a game or something like that. You know, before you show up to work, that you got your mind, you know, set on, you know, doing the correct thing that's going to get you through the day. Because on that job, there's a factor where you could get killed, you know, in the process, because you can't predict on what is going to happen. Even if you know you're going somewhere like a fire, It may not be what you think, you know, that sort of thing. So you have to always have to deal with that. And that and some racist white person, male or female, makes it even more complicated. You know, so yes, everything I've been hearing is accurate, very accurate as far as job experiences. Thank you.
Context of white supremacy. Take it seriously. Other folks that we've not heard from at all, if you dialed in, have a hand up, feel free. Line should be open.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
All right. I wanted to call about a situation that just happened right now on my job. There's a young black, non-white black male in the women's shift department. He's dealing with late 60s, maybe early 70s, white female. And, you know, he gets her shoes. She says, well, you know, back in my day, you know, they would sit you down, take the garbage out the shoes, and, you know, kind of like put the shoes on you, I guess. So she said, would you do that for me? So the guy says, yeah, I'll do that for you. So he starts to take the garbage out the shoes, which is just like the cardboard inserts or whatever. While he's doing that, she says, attaboy. So, my coworker, once she did that, I mean, he was just alerted. So, he put the garbage back in the shoe, handed it to the customer, and said, ma'am, my name is such and such, not attaboy. And he walked away. So, I guess the lady wanted the shoe, so she bought it for him. He rang it up. and, you know, just being professional and check out. You know, enjoy your shoe. Have a good day. I just want to let you know, I didn't mean anything wrong about Anna Boy or whatever. He's just like, yeah, just no worries. Just have a good day or whatever. So that's about it. I'm not following the conversation really, but I wanted to add that in because that just happened.
Wow.
I made my life.
Was this a non-white male with the that was?
Yeah, this is a it's a non-white black male.
Wow.
And the reason I know about it, you know, he was heated. You know, I would say he's more confused. So, you know, he came up to me and said, such and such has happened to me. What would you do? Then he explained the situation. And I said, you know, I would do the same thing. You know, tell the woman, hey, you know, my name is not Attaboy, it's such and such. But the fact that he put the garbage back in the shoe, handed it back to her, I mean, that's something probably I wouldn't even have done. But yes, a black guy and an older white woman. It's crazy.
Not crazy. I just listened. God bless the legendary Dr. Frances Cress Welsing. I just listened to the archives of one of her visits from 2012, and that was the very first question I asked, where she recommended, strongly suggested that black people resist the urge to classify these acts as racism. It's racist. This is predictable racism, white supremacy. Even from, and you said this was an older white woman, right? You said like 70s. Did I hear that right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Like late 60s, probably early 70s. Before, it's funny because she was like pre-qualified before, you know, she got a service. Said, hey, back on my day, this is how they did it. Will you take the garbage out for me? Would you do that? You know, he's not expecting her to call him out his name or whatever. He's like, yeah, do that. It's what we do. It's not a, you know, we do that for everyone. It's not an issue. But it's like you're sitting down in a chair, and he's doing this to, hey, attaboy.
Amazing.
I mean, wow.
Amazing. That is the system of white supremacy. And calling black people boy, that is like legendary in the system of white supremacy. I guess your coworker, colleague, he asked, you know, what would you do in this sort of situation? How would you handle it? I think what he did is great. Like, I'm sure there are a myriad of different ways, you know, other folks might have different suggestions for how they would have went about doing it, but I think that's phenomenal. Like, to just black
self. Yeah, and I, you know, I told him, I said, you know, what you do is right, because he was on the lines of, you know, I'm furious. Well, am I going to lose my job today? I mean, in an alternate scenario, I might have just cursed her out, you know, my name is not boy. You know, I said, no, you did the right thing. And I said, you know, I just advised him, hey, there's never a reason to curse someone out, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's either just ask some questions or, you know, just say, hey, tell them what your name is. But that things like that are not worth losing your job, you know?
Amen.
You got to kind of expect it to come and be prepared to react to it.
Absolutely. And that's what I was going to say. The response that he gave, it sounded like someone who was not like stunned that this happened, which is something I emphasize all the time. I know that's difficult, but I mean, just if you understand racism, white supremacy, it should never be like a surprising thing. A white person doing something racist, even to you, that should never be like, oh, my God, I can't believe that. Like, no, that's, I mean, we should really get to that point where I'm already looking at this white racist and expecting that something bad could happen. So I'll already kind of have my defenses up in dealing with this person. He sounded like that was the way he responded. He didn't get angry, which is something I say all the time. That's the number one thing, counter-racism on the job. You cannot lose your cool. When she says, attaboy, you throw those shoes at her and curse her out and no good B, who do you think you're going to lose your job. You could get arrested. I mean, it could go all kinds of bad for you. And I mean, you think you're going to win that? A 70-year-old white woman and you go off on her? You think that's going to come out where somehow, you know, you get a GoFundMe page and a promote? No way. So got to keep your cool, which sounds like that's exactly what he did. And still, black self, ma'am, my name is such and such and such and such, not attaboy. Here's your shoes. Have a great afternoon. Outstanding. I don't think he's going to. I mean, hey, you never know in the system of white supremacy, but I strongly suspect he's not going to have any repercussions for his conduct right there. I don't think he's going to get reported. For what did he do? What did he say? Ma'am, my name is such and such and such and such. Not attaboy. Good afternoon. Ring him up for the shoes. No worries. Have a good day. I think that's fine. I'm sure there are other ways that he could have went about it, but in my view, that's A plus.
I concur. Same thing. A plus. And it'd be they would have to put some effort in a meeting to try to say that he said or did something unpleasant. It would require some effort on their part to do that, based on how the gentleman explained on what took place. Tremendous level of self-respect and A plus. Yeah.
Absolutely. Got live time counter racism on the job update. That is amazing. Appreciate you taking the time out of your work schedule to share with us while you are actually on the plantation to see something happen. That is, and you can, if you have the time or the interest, you can, from Gus and I suspect Firefighter, some of the other listeners, you can commend your coworker and tell him that we think he did a great job. That's a great example of black self-respect. Might have had to step back to work. Other folks that we have not heard from, if you have commentary on what we've shared thus far, or if you want to share your own situation, feel free. I'll give out the number again, 641-715-3640. And the code is 564-943-pound. Press star 6 if you would like to participate. Folks have commentary, feel free. Don't know if they got me again, if we had people dial in who have a hand up and are not sharing. But in the meantime, I will make sure I get in once more. Oh my goodness, I forgot. Yes, you can. I'll just make sure I get in again. If we have people, I've been saying this, I think, for about a week or two. If we have people, any experience where you have requested a raise, I think that is important. That's something that white people talk about. I see where they share tips on ways that you go about requesting increased compensation. So that is certainly welcome and will be forever henceforward with the broadcast. But yes, sir, we can hear you. Proceed.
Great, Gus. How are you this evening?
Right poorly.
Yes, sir. I said right poorly. Another great show. Very constructive as usual, Gus. I really appreciate that. I have a comment, Gus, and I wanted to make a statement. One that's work-related and one that's not, if you allow me to. It's something that was placed on my heart to speak to you guys about. I'm here in Kansas City, and on the 24th of May, there was an incident. A body of a man was found hanging from a tree. To elaborate on that, what happened, it was a school bus of kids that was on the way to school in the morning, and the school bus driver, along with the kids, noticed the body hanging, and they immediately called the authorities. What I found interesting about that, on the same day, the authorities came out and they immediately called it a suicide and basically closed the case. What's also interesting about that, to this day, we don't know the name of the victim. We don't know whether they're Caucasian or non-white. We haven't heard anything from the victim's families. The news has suppressed this information and the case is closed. So I just found that very disturbing, my wife and I, and no one around here seems to take issue or maybe even, you know, that this has happened. So we just disturbed about that. I just wanted to put that out there for you guys and to do some research on it if you can. My experience here at work, which just happened to me today, Gus, I have been at this job for about 6 months. and I was on a 6 month probation, and my hiring process began today. The manager of this particular facility, I suspect him as a racist, right, white supremacist out the gate. I've heard as I was training, other employees were giving me the rundown about his mannerisms, his actions towards them, and they were actually classified as white, and I was the only non-white person there, so they was warning me about that. So as I interacted with him within about a week of my training, he asked me to come in the office, asked me how I liked it, how things were going, and I immediately, deliberately tried to create a buffer between me and him, and I said, one thing I like about you is how you carry yourself, your mannerisms, and how you're professional, and don't get up, how you are even keeled, no matter what's going on, whether if it's, good or bad, you're even keeled and professional with everyone. I did that purposely to keep a buffer between me and him. And from that point on, he was deliberate in his mannerism. He tried to stay professional. He didn't yell and scream because that's what I was hearing about his reputation. So he didn't do that towards me. Well, what's funny here about this is 6 months later to the day today, as of today, where my process for employment began. And he was giving me the terms of my offer for employment. And once we've agreed on the terms, I signed the papers. What was fascinating, he says, now I can be myself after 6 months. I can be myself. I can yell and scream at you now. I walked, and I just kind of chuckled in it. But I walked out of there like, how did he remember that after 6 months? I didn't even remember I said that, right? And he's been holding that in for 6 months so he can say that to me. And I just found that really fascinating that he would hold that in and think about that for 6 months. So it's a lot of things that, in between time that I had to stay on code with. He tried me in certain ways. For instance, when the Kaepernick thing came around, he tried to bring the subject up to me, and I felt that out of the test, how he thought that I was unpatriotic and things like that, and wanted me to respond. But Gus, I stayed on code, and guys, I stayed on code, and I totally ignored his comment, changed the subject, and I just kept it cordial and work related from that point on. So I kind of knew that I really didn't suspect he was a white supremacist. I knew he was a racist and white supremacist. So with that being said, I just found that fascinating after 6 months that he would make that comment, like he'd been waiting for 6 months to say that to me. So I'm kind of scared, or not scared, I wouldn't say that, but I'm a little nervous about going in tomorrow, how this relationship transpired. And I'll mute my line after that. Thanks, Gus, and thanks, God.
Wow. Thank you for sharing. I guess, number one, if it's not asking too much, if you could drop me an email, untiljustice@gmail.com. I'd like to follow up after the program about the hanging in your area, because that is important. And there have been a number of those, Khalid Flimbon and the incident, Frederick Jermaine Gooding. Frederick Jermaine Carter. We did the program on him back in 2010, black male found hanging in Mississippi. So if you could just drop me an email, I'll follow up with you after the program about the hanging, untiljustice@gmail.com. The workplace situation, that's why I said, just expecting. So you're not surprised when they come in, and it's now I want to make my comments about Bill Cosby or Colin Kaepernick or President Obama or whatever it is. I'm not surprised. And you have a code. You can give them the short one. Do the Emmy. I don't talk about politics on the job. But I mean, what do you mean that Colin Kaepernick is doing the protest? I don't talk about politics on the job. I just want to hear your opinion. Well, I'll talk to you later, Fred, and just leave it at that. No problem. Can't get in trouble for that. And like you said, a lot of times, in my view, racists, they just want to get us upset. They just want to have an argument. And a lot of times they're doing recon. They want to see how informed you are on racism. best thing you can do. I have nothing to say at all. Let's get back to, you know, doing our work, making some money. Right on. We don't get paid to talk about Colin Kaepernick or who's in the NFL or not. We get paid to do these here tasks. Back to work. That's the way I encourage nothing. I don't have nothing to say about the finals. I don't have nothing to say about Tiger Woods' arrest. Nothing. And I think even some people's code, Thomas in New York included, that I don't have anything to say about sports, period. I don't watch any sports. I do a little racquetball on the side and that's it. I don't pay attention to any sports. Don't watch any of them. I don't know anything about that. I don't wager on it. Nothing. So that way I'll never be involved in those conversations at work, because that's just another avenue for whites to be tacky and practice racism. Other folks who dialed in, who have a hand up that we've not heard from, if you have either your own situation you want to share or if you have comments, questions, feel free. Oh, my.
Can I be heard?
Oh, there's Ross. Good to hear from you, sir.
Peace. Greetings to you. Greetings to the callers and the listeners. It's been a long while. It's been so nuts. I've been dealing with my father-in-law. He's been up and down with some bed sores and whatnot, so it's been really hectic. And finally, after about 2 years of trying to get a visiting nurse and a doctor who would be able to visit him at home, since we can't physically move him anymore, he's pretty much bedridden. And we just finally got through, and there's a doctor that's going to be coming to see him soon, and we're going to be able to facilitate those things. It's going to take a little bit of time, so I'm thankful for that. I have a workplace update. Tomorrow will be my last day on this plantation. I mentioned it before that they were closing my department because they relocated to Arizona. So they finally did all of that, and they basically told us that tomorrow would be our last day, but they told us this maybe about 2 weeks ago. I'm not sure. So I had the paperwork with there's like a severance package and all of this stuff. So I'm definitely going to do that. I had some coworkers who were scrambling to try and get other positions in the company. Some of them were even interviewing today. But actually, the timing of me being laid off actually falls perfectly in line with the situation I'm dealing with at home with my father-in-law. So it'll give me the time I need to help my wife get him together and make sure everything is going well with the visiting doctors and the nurse. But then also I'm just going to take my time and look for something else. And it's weird because they actually were saying for us to continue to look for positions in the company, because they'll probably be hiring in the coming months. And just to speak to, we've talked about this a lot, not just myself, but quite a few people, yourself included, and quite a few other people who call into the cows, about white people watching us all the time. And it's the craziest thing. We had a meeting yesterday where it was like one of these, a goodbye lunch where they bought everyone lunch, and all of the people from my department were in the room, and we were eating and just talking about, you know, work-related stuff. Everybody's talking about what they're going to do or what they're thinking about doing or whatever the case may be. So I'm sitting there, and I was talking to another coworker, and she got up and she walked away. It's a white female. She walked away. So after she walked away, there's one of the higher-ups, like he was one of the head people over our department. He sits next to me. Now, mind you, this is a man who I've maybe spoken to twice, just in passing, saying hello, goodbye. And if we had like some company meeting, he would be standing there and have his discussions or whatever. But I really don't know the man outside of just seeing him in passing. And just the once or twice that I've said hello to him. So he sits next to me, and he just starts telling me all of this stuff about how he was asking me what I was planning to do. And I said, I'm going to take my time and look for something else, whatever the case may be. And he had also mentioned to me about, still looking for options within the company. And then he went on to say that I'm one of the nicest people he's ever seen in the company. He said I'm always a pleasant. He even peeped me, because there's a few non-white security guards that are in the vestibule of the building I work in. And I became friendly with them, and, you know, I'll stop and talk to them in the morning or whatever. If I'm on lunch, I'll speak to them. And of course I'll speak to them when I leave. And then also there's some, quote unquote, Latina, women, females who work, all over the company, but on my floor specifically, and they like clean up and things of that nature. And I speak to them as well. They don't, some of them don't speak English too well, but they speak well enough that I can, you know, have a decent conversation. And he just, he noticed all of that. He literally said to me, like, you know, just the way you converse with the security guards, everybody seems to like you. And I just said, well, listen, you know, I said, my approach to life is pretty much this. If a situation is as such that I have no control over it, then I'm not going to waste my time. If it's something that's out of my control, I'm not going to waste my time stressing and worrying myself to death about it. I said, if it's something that I can change, then I'm going to handle it ASAP. So I said, that's my approach. So I said, the reason why you see me pretty much in the position where you see me smiling a lot is because I don't have time to sit here frowning about stuff that I can't change. You know, if that's the case, then, hey, I just deal with it. Whatever it is, I trudge through it and keep it moving. But it just dawned on me that for the little bit of time, and he's been with the company for a little while, but for the little bit of contact we've had with each other, he's been watching me a lot more than I would have ever thought. And that little meeting with him during that sayonara lunch, I thought of you immediately, guys. I immediately thought of you. I said, this is what I'm saying. I said that thankfully my code is as such where I behave as if I'm being watched all the time anyway. So now that I know that he specifically was watching me, I can't imagine how many of the other little white rats on the job have been paying attention to me too. So I was thinking to myself, even if I was to return to that company, there was no way that I was not going to get some semblance of severance for all the torture they put me through for the last 2 years. So, you know, we'll see what happens. I'm not trying to go back there. If it happens, that's fine. Neely Fuller has talked about this too. It's better to stay at a job where you have an established history. So, I would just say it a little bit different in this scenario. Better to deal with a plantation where you know what's going on than to deal with a plantation where you don't know what's going on. So if something happens and there's a position that I know would be stable, that they're not going to relocate again, then I have no problem going back there in that regard. But I needed to get this bit of money and go handle my business for my family. So sorry if I was long-winded. Again, I miss you guys. I will be trying my darndest to get back on more regularly. And just peace and love to everyone. And I hope that that you all, whatever you're dealing with, I hope that if it's negative, that it improves. And if it's positive, I hope it continues to get better for you. And I'll put myself on mute for now. Thank you so much.
Wow, so great to hear from Roz. Wishing the best to your father-in-law and entire family. Always good to hear your suggestions and to hear the update. I hope this means that you are hours away from cashing in on that $5,000 bonus for sticking it out with these race soldiers.
Absolutely. I am within hours. I have to actually return the forms. I just signed them this evening. And it's actually 10 grand, so I'm like, cool, hit me
cha-ching,
off.
Cha-ching, cha-ching, cha-ching.
I'm like, hit me off, let me go do what I have to do. I get my father-in-law, you know, taken care of as far as making sure everything is okay, because my wife is not well-versed with the medical system. She knows that I work in the medical system, so she prefers to have me right there on board with anything that she's doing. And this being off the job will give me the opportunity to put the attention that I need to put towards getting everything set up properly with him. Once he's settled, that'll free me up to kind of just, you know, take a slow approach towards finding something else. And I have a few things in the fire. There's two people that I know from New Jersey Transit that are looking for some things. I have another coworker who's working in another company who's telling me about openings there. So there's a few things I have that I can, you know, do, but I'm just going to slowly transition. But first, make sure the family, the home front is okay first. But thank you so much for the well wishes and the prayers, because we need it. Thank goodness he's good. He's actually, mentally speaking, he's coherent. But the bed sores, he has one that's really bad, and we're trying to keep any new ones from popping up, because it's like once you get one, it just seems to be epidemic. And this I've heard from medical practitioners as well as people who've dealt with it themselves, other black people who've dealt with relatives that had that situation. So he has a couple of them. One is bad. The other ones we've been able to manage pretty successfully. And thank goodness his mental state has been really positive, and he's coherent, he's talkative. And from what he's told us, we've asked him if he's in pain. He said no, but I just don't think he would be comfortable with bed sores. So hopefully once we get him to get the medical practitioner to see him. We'll be able to get him stabilized and figure out, medically speaking, what's the best way to move forward to make sure that he heals as thoroughly and quickly as possible. I'll tell you one thing, for anyone who's within earshot, please, if you want to avoid a cold, sickness, flu, and even deal with bed sores, get colloidal silver. It will literally kill just about anything. And it's helped us quite a bit with the bed sores as far as with that. It's helped with colds, flus. It just kills just about every germ you could think of. So colloidal silver is something I think Black people should definitely research. There's tons of material about it, but it can literally kill a lot of germs and maybe keep you out of the hospital and keep you as far away from these psychotic medical practitioners as possible. So thanks again, Gus, and I'll mute my line.
Indeed. The best to your father-in-law, entire family, and wow, outstanding job with all the terrorism that you have had to endure, being able to cash in. And we've stated that consistently. I know you've spoken to this, many others. We should all be functioning. Yes, you are under surveillance. That's what the system of white supremacy means, particularly on the job. All kinds of surveillance. If they got devices, electronic surveillance, where they can monitor what websites you're on, phone tracking, which phone calls you've made. I think a lot of people, you're on jobs where your calls might even be recorded anyway. So just keep that in mind. Function in that manner at all times, that you're under surveillance. Everything that you said is being recorded. Everything that you write, every website. Just keep that in mind. And I think as long as you get in a habit of functioning in that way, no problem. I think the only time you get in trouble is when you think that is not the case and or you're doing incorrect things. That's when it can be a problem. Other folks that are with us, again, good to hear from Roz. Other folks that are with us have commentary, suggestions, questions. You want to address your own situation, feel free.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Awesome. This is Ken Steele. I am calling in from Chino Hills. And I just wanted to concur with the previous caller. Antibacterial silver is really, really useful. And I've been using it.
Workplace racism.
Oh, sorry about that. I just wanted to concur with that. And then regarding workplace racism, there was a caller earlier. I could be mistaken. I've been listening from the start. I was just indisposed. But I could be mistaken, but there was a victim that reported that they were able to stay on their plantation for quite some time without incident. Is that the case, or is that correct?
Absolutely. It was a Black female call. I think she said it was like 4 years. She was on the job. It was great. She hung out with her coworkers, white and non-white, and no issues.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I ran into I went to school with a victim who recently was in a very similar situation at their workplace. They worked at a tech firm known as Google. And they were at their job for about 4 years. And then this victim reported to me that they were unexpectedly, his words, he was unexpectedly fired. This was very sudden, according to him. And at the time, he was pretty distraught about the whole thing. And I asked him, I asked him about his workplace and some of the things that he encountered. And as soon as I got into question mode with him, it became apparent that racism was, in fact, a problem at his workplace, so much so that they even had a group of Black people or victims of racism meeting to discuss this problem. Now, these meetings were moderated and put on by the organization itself. And I just want to tell victims that at a lot of these jobs, they are designed to make us not pay attention to what is happening.
according to this victim, there were, I guess in hindsight, as he said, there were signs that his job was about to come to an end with that firm. But he was not paying attention because he thought that racism wasn't a problem or wasn't that big of an issue or wasn't something that he had to deal with every single day. And because he was not paying attention, he did not take any sort of notes. He did not take any sort of keep any sort of records or anything. So he has zero recourse with his employer that unexpectedly terminated him for reasons that he wouldn't articulate to me. So I'm suggesting to victims, even though you may be on a select plantation for quite some time, you need to be keenly aware that we are still in a system of racism and white supremacy. And oftentimes these arrangements, they may seem like they are going to last forever. They may seem like they are the most pleasant arrangement that you can be a part of. But if you begin to ask questions and really investigate the situation that you are in, you will quickly find that there are incorrect actions, behaviors, incorrect instances taking place that you should be writing down, you should be keeping in your records, you should be making note of, and you should be monitoring for any sort of patterns. And also, doing so can pay off financially. There can be financial benefits that you can receive from taking detailed notes about the racist activities that take place on your job. So please, please, please be aware that every single day you walk into this organization, you could be fired on the spot for any reason that you may not be aware of. So just be aware. Do not let these racists get your guard down. Do not be convinced that you are not in a racist situation, because you are. And I guess that's my contribution. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Appreciate that. Appreciate that. Absolutely. More often than not, as you stated, racism, white supremacy, that is exactly the environment that we're in, whether it seems peachy and great or not. Absolutely. A lot of times it's just we just don't understand, myself included. I know that has been the case for me in those situations. And again, the temporary nature, I think that's important as well, at least for me, that it tends to be that, or I don't know a whole lot of black people who can say that they're in a great cushy situation that lasted for like 30 years, where they got this job and they got to ride off into the sunset after 30 great years of a cushy work environment. I know very few, very, very few black people who can truthfully say that. Other folks, appreciate that, Mr. Steele. Other folks who dialed in, if you have commentary, questions or comments on what you've heard thus far, or if you have your own situation, feel free. The number again, 641-715-3640. The code 564-943-pound. Press *6 if you would like to participate. Again, this is not the broadcast for spectators. Other folks who dialed in have commentary? Assume, did we get everybody who dialed in with a hand up? We miss anybody? I will assume we got them all. If other folks who are with us, if you have either your own situation, if you have comments, you can feel free to dial in. I'll make sure to get in the other folks who wrote commentary in as well. Our young caller in the Bay Area, he wrote in. Again, he's a 16 high school student. He wrote, in our history class, we are holding a debate as one of our final projects. Our topic is how South Korea should not accept the apology from Japan for their commitment with the Comfort Women situation. For those who don't know, the situation was when the Japanese took mainly Korean females around their teenage years, and they did a lot of traumatizing things to them, from rapings to overwhelming work. More that the males related to the women were killed through through torturing ways. I would honestly agree with South Korea on this notion because nothing can really pay for what Japan did to some of their women. Japan offered about $8 million and an apology to South Korea, and they declined. With these details, I feel like my debate team will win. That is all I would like to share. Well, I guess I have to get the update on how his debate proceeds next week. Again, I encourage children, black children. I was told this when I was a child, to think of school as work. You spend about the same amount of time there, and it functions in a lot of ways exactly the same. The authority figures generally tend to be white, another environment that's saturated with racism, white supremacy, where you can be subjected to all sorts of arbitrary, discretionary, punitive actions. Very, very similar environments, but I think that can be constructive, and even you can begin documenting things. Document what your teacher says. They say something or make a comment, ask a question that, you know, is questionable. Document, you know, Mr. So-and-so, did you say, could you repeat what you said again, sir, ma'am? And just and since most of them are white women, yeah, Mrs. Johnson, can you repeat what you said, ma'am? And, you know, just write it down. But I think that can be very constructive, and he gives us weekly updates on what he's experiencing in the classroom. Other folks have commentary they wanted to share, or we get everybody.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, hi. Good evening, everybody. Again, this is The Voice 305 from Miami. I don't know if anybody, I know retired firefighters down here, but anybody else from Florida, man, it is really, really bad when it comes to workplace racism down here. Like the caller, she stated that she had four wonderful years of just being on the job. If you live in the state of Florida, that is highly impossible because not only do you have to deal with racist whites, but you have to deal with these racist Hispanics who act like they're racist whites as well. I had an ex the other day. She just called me about how she was at work. And when she was at work, you know, they work in a cubicle. So it's her and three other black females that work in that same area, and they have a Hispanic maid that comes in and she cleans up around the area. And now there's another friend of theirs that she's also Hispanic too. So while she's cleaning around, you know, she's speaking in Spanish, but she knows that, you know, they don't speak Spanish. So what happened was one day their friend, the friend of theirs that is not, that is Hispanic, she was there late one day, and what happened was when the Hispanic lady came in to clean up in their area, she was saying remarks in Spanish, and the friend picked it up, and the friend came back and told them the next day what she said in Spanish, and when it translated to, they're so disgusting. These blacks are so disgusting. It feels like I'm cleaning up around pigs. So, you know, I told my peoples to, you know, you got to go and just, you got to make it be known, document it, so at least it's on record. Because when you wait too long and you don't have nothing documented, people could just say, you're the problem, you're the issue. You never said nothing before, and it's easy for them to fire you and get away with it. So I just found that very, you know, just tale-telling that it's just so much that goes on, man. It's just a lot. It's a lot. And I'll just mute my line.
Wow. That was kind of the sentiment that I thought, and I think we've had other people talk about that, victims, other victims on the job. That's us in the workplace. I generally just don't think of as an environment where I'm, you know, very chummy and friendly with anybody, white or non-white. But I don't think it's just not designed for black people to have that sort of long-term and pleasant, productive employment. That's just not what the system of white supremacy is about. It's about having something that you absolutely loathe and doing something while you loathe it and are being mistreated, you are supporting the system of white supremacy. That's what, you know, jobs are all about under the plantation system of white supremacy. Other folks have...
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir, Roz. Go ahead.
Oh, thank you. I just wanted to speak to the previous caller because I didn't get to listen to the earlier commentary until I actually called in. I wasn't listening until I actually called in to speak. But for people who do have what they would consider positive workplace experiences for Black people who may have those sorts of experiences, or at least that's the way that they're feeling. I would just say, one of the most important things that you want to keep in mind, especially in a white dominated environment like the plantation, is you have white people who will make you feel very comfortable, but the comfort is not for you. It's for them. It's for them to get your guard down. It's for them to be able to ask you questions about yourself and be able to write up dossiers, whether it's mental or actually writing down dossiers on you about what you do, what your life situation is, what your circumstances are. And it's just, it's human nature that as you become more comfortable in the circumference of people, that you tend to be more open about yourself. And white people are constantly investigating us. And a lot of the ways that they do it is by being very nice, very pleasant. And most of us fall for it in the sense that because they make us feel comfortable. And then for some of us, there's also that God complex, like, oh, Jesus is paying attention to me because this white person is paying attention to me, that we'll just start, the floodgates open and you just start to say everything about yourself. And always remember that white people can turn that niceness off immediately. They can go from nice to terroristic in a split second. And just because you tend to have pleasant experiences with them, don't ever lose sight of the fact that the hierarchy is still a plantation hierarchy. And there's just so many examples of that where white people will be very, very accommodating, very, very nice to you. They'll do things for you, and you'll assume or be under the assumption that everything is really good and this person is all right, or this group of people and, you know, my job situation is good. And all the while they're plotting on you and you have no idea. So for the person who did have that pleasant experience from what they said, that's wonderful. You know, that's good. But I hope that in that experience that you still live by some sort of code in order to protect yourself by not giving too much away about yourself. And that's how I function. It can be hard for us as Black people to function that way because the world is just an ugly place because white people have turned this planet into their sexual toilet and their global plantation of white supremacy. So it can be hard, but in reality, they're waging war against us. We are intergenerational prisoners of war. And when you go to the plantation, that is one of the most acute forms of warfare that they practice. The other is in the bedroom. So always remember that regardless of what it is, everything with white people is political. And the politics they play is racism, white supremacy. So that's all I just wanted to implore people. And it's wonderful if you're having a decent experience, but don't ever lose that code. Don't ever drop your code. Don't ever drop your guard. Don't sleep on them and don't sleep with them. They are psychotic. They're terroristic. They're narcissistic. They're sociopathic. They're psychopathic. And don't ever lose sight of that, no matter how much they smile on your face and no matter how many good deeds you might think that they're doing for you. Because while they're doing that, they're doing something else that you're not aware of. I guarantee it. Thank you, and I'll meet my line.
Appreciate that, Roz. Very important point. Racists, they can, they talk about 0 to 60 seconds. Woo! Racists, they can go from smiling and pleasant to total terrorism in about 5 seconds. We see that demonstrated all the time. And absolutely, they can be nice sometimes just to get you to be, to lower your guard, as they say, to be less suspicious of them so that they can be even more devastatingly effective on how they abuse us. I was reminded, the caller who dialed in previously is a male caller, and he was talking about a white person on the job, and they had went through like their 6-month probationary period or whatever it is. And he said that once that period ended, said, now I can yell and scream at you like I really want. And the caller, he was saying how, I guess this was alluding to, I guess, something back when he first started out. And he was like, wow, this white guy remembered that from 6 months ago to say that now. that stood out. I think to me that just speaks to, I mean, to think about something for 6 months, right? And then now I can say, and in that context where now I can, as a white man, as a racist, now I can tell this black guy, now I'm not on probation. I can yell and scream at you. Like, wow, that's sizable. And just to me, I think that's significant because that's the system of racism, white supremacy. White people wake up, go to bed, dream about terrorizing niggers. That's their whole life. That's their whole existence. And I mean, I think it's hard for us to conceptualize that frequently, myself included. But I think just those little illustrations right there, I think that's why it's, at least for me, that's why it's profound. Yes, that's what I've been thinking about for the past 6 months. The day that I can tell you what I really think, nigga. That's at least that's how it's translated to me. Unless I got that confused, you can let me know if I misheard or if you had a different interpretation, sir. Other folks that are with us, if you have commentary, question, Emmy should be with us. If you have commentary, feel free.
Can I be heard?
We hadn't heard from Emmy at all. I was going to get her unless she's not able to speak. If she's unable, then we'll get Mr. Steele.
Can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. Greetings, everybody. I'm just now being able to speak, so there were a couple things I wanted to comment on. But for Ms. Red, I was wondering if you had ever tried emailing her, like the way that we use that codification with white people, but like switching it to use with this non-white black female who's kind of not doing her share of the work. And I was thinking if you emailed it and put it in writing, that would put like a similar type of pressure on her to let her know, like, hey, you know, I don't want to have to go to white people, but I might have to because this is, we need to go ahead and be real professional about this. I just figured that might buy her a little bit more time. Like, let's say she is going through a divorce or something. Maybe instead of just going directly to the white people and being like, look, I have this problem, maybe you could try to, like, just give her some time but put pressure on her at the same time. I don't know if that's making any sense, but that was something I had thought about when you shared. And then the second opening clip, that's probably the most moving piece I've heard on the cows thus far. And I'm a recent, like, I'm not the 8 year long listener. So it's not to say I've heard all of the clips, but that piece literally, or that woman speaking literally just stopped me on my tracks and I just had to hear. It was very telling. I could feel how she was feeling in her voice. There was, the woman who wrote in, kudos to you for practicing or enacting or putting in your counter-racist codification methods at work. It definitely seems like you were taking notes. And I like it when people actually like try things and it works. So kudos to you. And then, okay. Oh, and I'm so happy to hear back from Ross because I was wondering what happened. You just kind of fell off for a while. So glad to hear that things are working out for you. And I hope all things are well. I do have my own little story. So I'm the one in the DMV area who does the overnight weekends concierging at a residence building. And I'm going to just be honest. I think I was slipping. I think I'm tired because it's like a long commute in school and all this other kind of stuff. But I'm kind of tired. And so I just kind of got comfortable, I think, but not too comfortable because I told y'all about the one guy who I will mace him if he approaches me in the wrong way. I'm resigned on it. I'm prepared for it. I have all my mace, my recorder, and my tactical pen, which I love my tactical pen. I love watching videos on it too. But anyway, so I had to get a blazer. Well, find a blazer with pockets. And I had all of this in my pockets. So that no matter where I was in the building, like say I was restocking something or like moving around, if he approached me, I still had it on me. So that was one of the things, but it wasn't him who I was almost going to have to use my mace on. So I admit I was slipping, like I said, and got comfortable. So it's it's Sunday morning. This is a Saturday night to the Sunday morning. It's 3:43 a.m. Sunday morning. And I'm doing homework. It's quiet in the lobby. It's just me, you know. And the weather was kind of nice around here, so folks are, you know, still kind of trickling in, but not like a whole lot of people. So it was kind of dying down. And this white guy appears at the front door. The doors are glass, so I can see them. They can see me. And he's bleeding from his head. So the Emmy that you all hear completely, like, checked out, and I pushed the button and let him in. Now, the minute he walked through the front door, a chill went down, like the most visceral chill in my chest went all the way down to my feet. And I was like, I just stuck. So, like, now I'm like hands in pocket, finger on mace, like I'm ready. And so he, of course, comes in. Now, what's strange, here's an aside, this is why you shouldn't watch television. I actually was like, what if he's a zombie? And I was like, I should have the tactical pin in my hand, not to be, you know, for whatever. I used to watch Walking Dead. So, but I just thought that that was stupid because the way he was moving was very zombie-like. And it, like, real, like, kind of thing. And he had blood coming down his face, which is what had me open the door. Anyway, so now he's coming through the second glass door. And now I'm like, heart's racing, everything's going on. He gets to the front desk. I'm standing, right hand, finger on the mace, like everything's laid, I'm ready. I'm actually on the phone, so I'm not recording with my phone. So, but anyway, otherwise I'd play this back for y'all. So I'm so disappointed that I didn't get it, but I was happy that I was on the phone because I think me actually being on the phone helped me a little bit because I was like, chill, hold on for a second. Like, hold on, you know? So the person knew I was on the phone. So this white guy comes to the front desk and I just immediately ask him, do you live here? No. Do you know someone who lives here? No. I was attacked. You need to call the police. Let's call the police. No, I don't want to call the police. Now, this is where I get even more silly, because the minute he said no, he didn't want to call the police, that should have stopped the conversation for me. But it didn't. I pushed it. I was like, you need to call the police. Like, and like finger, I'm like almost shaking and everything. And he's like, it's all this intense eye contact. I talk about that all the time. He's bleeding. He don't want to call the police. Like, I'm starting to trip just a little bit. And then he's like, and I said, well, then you need to leave. Now, my friend on the phone is losing it, like, call the police. And he tells me he doesn't want to leave. So then I just go ahead and dial 911, finger, and he keeps looking at my hand because, like, the blazer, I don't have, you know, I'm like, I had a cute blazer, so it had, like, a real small pocket, but it was in there, so it's, like, my elbow's kind of bent, so it looks a little weird. So you know I have something in my pocket. He just doesn't know what, because he kept looking, and it was only when I threatened to call the police and, like, almost maced him that he actually left. And so he did make it out of the second glass door, and then it locked, and then I was just sitting there going through a whole lot of emotions and a whole lot of questions. The only, I think, silver lining, I think, is it allowed me to practice just a couple things, like not panicking and being firm and, like, actually being in a really bad situation. Like, that was so stupid. Not trying to, like, be hard on myself or anything, but that was stupid. And because he had this look in his eyes and probably drinking, and who's been attacked and don't want to call the police? Like, no, that's not cool and that's not right. So, I will never do that again. And I just remember I was so on point when I first started because I understood the precarious, very dangerous situation that I'm in at that, you know, hour at that time. And after so many times of being met with, like, so much frustration, like, I live here and all this other kind of stuff, and then thinking that I'm recognizing people, what I'm saying is I got lax and I got comfortable to my detriment. And I think I put myself in a very, very, very dangerous situation. And I'm grateful that it did not go anywhere. Like, it didn't, you know, escalate to the point that I actually had to, like, defend myself at, like, a physical level, but I felt I had to do that at a verbal level and make it known that I'm not with him and that he needed to leave. So, like I said, silly, because I should have never opened that door. But I guess I did learn something. But yeah, that's what I wanted to share. So thank you all for listening.
Appreciate that, Emmy. One of our female, black female listeners, she says she always appreciates your workplace racism commentary and suggestions, finds them very helpful, as do many others, I'm sure. I think the best thing about that is, like, you recognize, like, man, Emmy, slipping. Need to get it together. Can't believe I mean, that's the best thing. I think, you know, I say this regularly. We should be our own toughest critics. You know best what your code is. You know best when you are on point, on square with what you're supposed to be doing. And when you're a little lax, when you've been cutting a few corners. And just on the job, I mean, it's hard to get in that mode where you can just be like a machine, for lack of a better word, but just every day. I'm serious. I'm alert. I'm paying attention. I'm not relaxed. I'm looking at every single white person here, and maybe even some of the victims, as, you know, enemies, particularly the people that could be out to sabotage me or do something to me. And I got my tactical pen at the ready, and, you know, I'm ready to get down. It's difficult, I think, to get to that point where you're just disciplined and you got it together like that. And all of us, you know, have days where we're like, man, I could have done better. I think as long as you recognize that, you recognize the days where you weren't, your game was a little off, and you can make those improvements. Great. That's exactly. And that's the sort of thing that you can note in your workplace journal. You can just have that as a note today. June 1, I was a little off today. Didn't follow through with the code. Importance of just sticking with the code. If the code is, you know, are you a resident? You know, do you have your key or whatever it is? Boop. And that's what I stick to every time. Stick to the code. That can just be the journal entry for the day. And it's been my experience that that sort of thing, it tends to have an impact in just getting you to be more disciplined so that you don't make that same error, in my experience. Other folks have commentary, questions based on what they've heard or just your own experiences?
Can I be heard? Or?
Yes, sir, Mr. Steele.
Awesome, awesome. I just want to say to Emmy, you know, you're very fortunate that that didn't turn out any worse than it did, and I'm very thankful that you're all right, and I think it's a great thing that you're recognizing that you might not be paying as much attention to your surroundings as you, or your circumstances that you might need to be doing. And I think that's just a reminder for all of us to just reassess the situation that we're in. Perhaps we may need to take more notes. Perhaps we may need to just be more critical of our surroundings. So I really enjoyed that story. I mean, from the perspective of just refreshing us as to how we need to continually practice our codification. I wanted to give a tip because of the, I guess, circumstance or just my background with working on the plantation. I know a few tricks about something that you can do with LinkedIn. And in situations where you're looking for new employment and you need references and you've been made aware that references at a previous employer may not be as positive as you would like them. One thing that you can do is you can create new profiles on LinkedIn very easily. And you can, on these profiles, say anything that you want. So with that information, you can go ahead and find out, you know, hey, if you need a manager at a previous employer, you can go ahead and make a LinkedIn profile for a manager at this location. And they can have any sort of private email and private contact number that you want them to have. And oftentimes, I suggest if you are going this route, you would be better off having a previous manager that sounds like a male suspected white supremacist. That's from my experience. That's really effective. And, on LinkedIn profiles, you can have them say whatever you want. You can build out profiles to have whatever kind of work history you want them to display. And oftentimes, this will be the extent to which an employer will go ahead and check, references or backgrounds or anything like that. So that's just something that, just in my travels, I've kind of picked up on, and that's something that you can definitely exploit to your benefit. Thank you.
Great suggestion from Mr. Steele. I know we talked about LinkedIn before, whether or not to have a pickup there at all and that sort of thing. But that's good idea. Maybe even you can have a whole different account if you have concerns about, people trying to sabotage you moving forward in your work career. If other folks have commentary, questions, suggestions, feel free. The number again, 641-715-3640. The code 564-943-pound. Press *6 if you would like to participate. One thing I would recommend, it might seem a little silly, but take a typing class, particularly any folks, a lot of your work involves being at a computer for any length of time, improving your typing skills greatly boosts your efficiency and your use of time and energy. If you know you have background noise, if you could mute your line, that would be grand. Other folks have commentary they want to share?
May I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Hello, this is Red again. I just wanted to thank Jimmy for her commentary. I did want to also say, because I'm definitely not trying to be pessimistic or anything like that. I kind of feel like I have exhausted basically all avenues. I have actually recently sent her out an email about something that she has done wrong, and then sometimes it'll go back. It'll become like a back and forth type of thing where I have to break down the process, and I can waste 10, 15 minutes just going back and forth with it. But I'm definitely going to try to, if I see something like this happens again, I'm definitely at least going to try to actually give her the procedures. That's the only thing that I have not done as of yet. But I was afraid of how it would appear. Like I felt like it would appear like I would be like, I'm being like, rude. Like, you just need to read this, because one of the things that I have noticed is that, and from her own admission, is that she does not read emails. And I've basically said something to her in the past, like, with this type of work that we do, you have to read emails, you have to read any updates on any procedures. That's something that's imperative, but it's something that she is, like I said, by her own admission, she's like, oh, well, there's too many emails. The procedures are too cumbersome to go through. So, but I definitely appreciate that. And I'm going to just try another way to try to get through to her. If that doesn't work, then like we had discussed, I'll just have to speak to white people. Thank you.
Great suggestion. I thought that was a great suggestion about the email as well. Big fan of using the emails to solve problems in the workplace and create that electronic footprint of what has been happening, record of questions asked, your effort to get the problem solved. Was there someone else who was going to speak up simultaneously?
Yes, sir. Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Just want to make sure I'm using Bluetooth now driving. Miss Emmy, just wanted to say that I have on my television set, it's going to be strange for me to say this, but there's a lot of programs on my satellite that talks about self-defense, and these programs are ran by white people. And the first thing that they say that one should have in situations similar to yours is distance. Because with distance, you have options. Once distance is narrowed, you have less and less options. So you are correct on how you evaluated your activities. You want to keep distance from that person. If it looks like, especially if somebody's bleeding, I'm not letting that person in, I will call the police. And I'll see those blue lights on the other side of that window or whatever. And if that person stays out there bleeding, may bleed to death if that's the case. But nevertheless, don't let that person have a close distance to you. As far as what I've witnessed about killers, I've seen the results. I didn't see the actual activity, but I've seen the results of people who kill. And let me tell you something. That pen and that mace is not going to stop them. In other words, give you an example. The white male who killed those two white males in Oregon, I don't think he would stop at no pen or some mace. So, like I said, just one thing you keep cognizant of is distance from somebody that you sense. And believe in your senses. Believe in your senses. Everybody can always be wrong, but in a situation of you being wrong, you know, so what? You know, when it comes down to it. Safety is the best thing for your own best interest. You know, and that's basically how I see it. And hopefully I said something that's helpful. Thank you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Appreciate that, retired firefighter. And you can even think of kind of the stereotypical racist response, right? Like when the white person, they say they're on like the elevator and they clutch their purse, like because I'm afraid or what have you, or they're in the vehicle and a Negro walks by and they reach over and lock all the doors and that sort of thing. You can do the same thing, or any of these race soldiers that have killed an unarmed black child even said, oh, I was, you know, terrorized. You can do the same thing in these sort of environments. A lot of us work our job environment where frightening things happen, or at least things that, you know, make or cause for concern and suspicion. You can do the same thing. Encourage that. Hey, man, I was startled. You know, he was bleeding and looking strange, and I just thought the best course of action was to phone the authorities. Like, I think we can be very, we should be, all of us should be very conservative given the system of racism, white supremacy, and especially if it looks like it's a white person and there's something untoward, right? Because we've been conditioned to do the exact opposite. Our counter-racist code should be like, our default is anything fishy with a white person, like, oh, man. This could be Charles Manson or, you know, Jeffrey Dahmer out at the door like, oh, I got to, or whatever. Walking Dead. He could infect us all. I was going to say, too, I think a few people have mentioned over the past, I was going to say last weeks, but it's been a while now. I think I can think like years where people have mentioned white people sneaking up on them at the job. I was going to say, if you live in one of those areas, if you have a concealed carry permit, or even if you have tactical pen, pepper spray, whatever it is, that might be one where you can brandish and let them know, like, hey, you know, I have a tactical pen, or, you know, I do not play with people jumping out and trying to play games and what have you. You could have been sprayed. You know, I'm handy with this here tactical pen. It could have got bad quickly. Do not sneak up on me. That can be another way that you deal with that as well, to make sure that that gets handled in a very serious way, because that's just, I mean, we're in a work environment. I mean, am I at home with my children, or are we on our job trying to make some money? I'm confused. What's going on here? Are we at the playground or something? Just, you know, nip that in the bud as quickly as possible. But that's, you know, one possible suggestion for, you know, how you proceed if you got people that are whites that are insistent upon sneaking up on you at the job. Other folks have commentary, suggestions, anything they want to share?
Be careful with brandishing firearms. That is a crime in certain jurisdictions. From what I understand, you are trained to, if you pull it out, you better use it. So be very, very, very careful.
Absolutely.
Well, it's actually racist that I have a gun. You know, that's something, if a gun comes out, you better be ready to pull it.
Absolutely. Pointing, certainly, but certainly if you have your concealed carry or lawfully allowed to carry, I think you certainly can, even just showing them the paper, and I've seen white people do that skillfully, when they just brandish their certificate that they are lawfully allowed to have a concealed firearm. And I just do not do the sneaking up at all on the job. Like, yeah, I do not play that. I take that very seriously, and let's get back to work.
Have you heard?
Heard everybody.
Is it your first time? I've already spoken. I can hear
you.
It's your first time.
No, go ahead. Ladies first. Go ahead.
Thank you, everyone, for your suggestions. I agree. I was in shock after that. So I know it's time. Like, I'm not going to say I love guns, but I like them. And I, you know, believe in that Second Amendment if there's anything that I believe in about this place. But I'm not licensed, but I do think that that's like something to definitely consider. Cause you know, I am in good old Virginia, so it ain't like I cannot. Most of the people around here are probably carrying all the time, even at the gas station. So thank you for all of that. And Mr. Firefighter, thank you. As soon as you said my name, I laughed because I felt like I was about to get the daddy speech. But yes, you're right. I do know the weaknesses and downfalls of just having mace and a tactical pen. Prayerfully, I won't be here too long. I'm always looking to make my next move. So that's also part of my counter-racist codification is to, you know, I didn't want to do this forever. It was just convenient for the time. And then I wanted to just because Jess a couple of times, I think just in this broadcast, he's been mentioning like it's not just the white people, like sometimes the victims too you got to pay attention to. The whole weekend, I kind of flagged. So another, and it's funny, it's like there was a white one bleeding and then a black man bleeding. So, but he comes in with his girlfriend. This is early Saturday morning. He comes in, asks me if I have a napkin. I saw he was bleeding. Like, do you want a Band-Aid? Then he started talking about him and his girl was fighting. And I was like, you know, I don't really have nothing to do with that. And then she was looking at me all funny. So I just went ahead and just gave him the napkin. I didn't get a chance to get him a Band-Aid. And I was like, just go ahead and go. I don't want to deal with this. 10 minutes later, he comes down and he asked me for the Band-Aid. And I was like, okay, cool. Maybe they don't have no Band-Aids upstairs, no problem. I was like, is this one going to work for you? He was like, yeah. Then he went and sat down. The lobby is big. It has couches and stuff like that. And there's also a television, but I was doing homework, so I had it on Lifetime, and then it was mute. And I was like, don't no black man want to sit and watch Lifetime on mute? Like, so I went and I changed the channel, like all of this, you know what I mean? And because I figured maybe he and his girlfriend got into an argument, the apartment's small, they don't want to see each other, so he came down here just to chill for a second, and he's going to go back up, you know what I mean? So I, you know, changed the channel, everything, turned the volume up, whatever, whatever, and it was like, I went away for a little bit from the desk, but I straightened everything, and I had, okay, anyway, I had some popcorn in a bowl. When I came back, I was only gone for like 3 minutes. When I came back, there was popcorn all over my desk, or not my desk, the desk I sit at, it ain't mine, and popcorn all the way from the desk I sit at to the door, all the way outside the second glass door, all outside on the curb. Now, I was like, did he really just, you know what I'm saying? And I was like, before I jump to conclusions and say it's him, for all I know, he could have left, went to the bathroom, some white person came and did that. I'm going to run the cameras back. I run the cameras back, and it was him. So who I was able to see, because I can't see at the desk, but I was able to actually see him with a handful of my popcorn walking out the door. And I felt really violated. I'm going to be honest about that, because I put love into that popcorn. And he just dug his hands and was like all over the place. And so anyway, getting to the point of being really, really codified, even with the our fellow non-white black folks, because that was really interesting. He could have asked me for popcorn. I would have totally given it to him. But just to do that, like, what was the point of that? And so sometimes I think, like, we don't realize that when we're discourteous to each other, well, I think maybe some people realize it, but that furthers white supremacy, because then one way that I view it is that way, when you talk about discrimination and you talk about somebody doing you wrong and they're white, non-white people are real quick to be like, well, there's non-white people who do things that are incorrect. So, but anyway, so I wish he knew that. And when I see him, if I see him, I'm going to say something about it. It ain't going to be confrontational, but I'm not going to forget. But I just wanted to share that. So thanks.
Wow. That is, part of me was thinking, like, she was at work with the bowl of popcorn, like, lounging. But, I mean, I can understand, too, if you're doing an overnight shift, you have to snack, you know, where you can. I'm sure they don't allow you to get a nice, comfortable hour lunch break to go and recharge and eat and all that. But, yeah, even non-white people can pose difficulties in the work environment. You have to figure out ways to neutralize. The male caller who spoke up simultaneously, thank you for allowing Emmy to go first. Were you going to comment, sir?
Yes, it's the voice 305 again. I was just going to say, I've been with my job for 10 years now, and I was just letting people know that you have to check on HR or your job or your supervisor. Just make sure, like, when they do their annual, yearly that comes, or if they just sporadically just come and just drop, oh, here's the employee manual, and they say, oh, yeah, we got some new employee manuals. Sometimes people think that, because I had coworkers that thought it was the same book, it was just a fresher print or just a revision of basically if somebody lost it, they were just giving out some reprint. But in actuality, I have three different employee books at that time, and they're all different. But sometimes they don't tell you that it's different. That's why you have to, like, really look into the books and really study them, because there's always one or two or sometimes several different laws that they change inside those books. And if you don't realize, they're not going to tell you, and they know what they change. And you could lose your job in default not knowing. So it's just good, like, whenever you get those books and they throw you the employee book, just look over them, make sure there's no changes, so you're not blindsided. And that's pretty much what I wanted to say.
Absolutely. I am so glad you included that, caller down in Florida. That is extremely important. I've talked consistently. I said I generally include it in every description that I post, like on social media, and when I write up the descriptions for the workplace racism segment, it includes policy and procedure. That is extremely important that you review it. If you work on a job where they make those little edits every year, every 6 months or whatever it is, very important. Read it. And I've said this before, if you have a thicker policy and procedure, I know sometimes they can be lengthy. Read 10 minutes a day, 15 minutes a day. You can break it up that way. Within 2 weeks, you'll have it read and you'll know it. And you can just highlight little points that are important when they have those little updates. Exactly what you said. A lot of times they might not come out and tell you what the changes are. They will just say, oh, we made a few edits to the policy. It's in your email. You'll have the PDF, or, you know, we put the we got the printed copy. It's in your box or what have you, mailbox. And, it'll just be up to you to read it and make sure that you understand it. Very important point. Exactly as you said, racist, you could lose your job by default. That, you know, that's a part of your job. You're supposed to know what you are responsible for, what you're, you know, supposed to comply with in terms of procedure. And you didn't do it. So, you know, peace out. Do that sort of thing all the time. Other folks who have commentary, we have a little less than a half an hour left, unless everyone's satisfied. If you have commentary, you should go ahead and speak now. Don't wait till the last minute. Number again, 641-715-3640. The code 564-943-pound. Press *6 if you would like to participate. I will have to say, I considered it. Workplace racism, LeBron James' house being vandalized, nigger was spray painted on his California property, And he, you know, addressed it yesterday, I guess the final media conference before the contest began today. And he used that as an opportunity to discuss how difficult black people have it and to talk about Emmett Till. I thought that was workplace racism, where that's your profession and you have, as a part of your profession, you have to give interviews, and you use that as an opportunity to discuss Emmett Till. Wow. But yes, I thought too, that might be workplace racism. I think he's been featured twice on workplace racism this year, where some white people made remarks about he and some of his other white colleagues, co-workers. That was earlier the same season. Other folks have commentary, suggestions, figured out some things that have worked out that would be helpful.
I did have a comment on, I'm sorry, just real quick. I did have a comment on what you just said. I did actually hear about that because, like I said before, I've watched News One Now with Roland Martin. And I was getting a newspaper from a store, and I don't know if anybody is aware of, like, these little newspapers that are circulating a lot now with, like, the, like, arrest records of different people. And sometimes they'll have, like, a celebrity section. And they, on the cover, they basically had him with, it almost looked like his face was kind of like in a frowny type of face. And underneath it, it said, well, being black in America is tough, in quotation marks, almost as if they were making fun of it. So this definitely is if, like, racist, they don't care if you are affected by it or not. You know, they find a way to make it into a joke. I'll mute myself.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Cynical African shared a racist joke with us today. The other caller who spoke up simultaneously. Appreciate that, Red.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Awesome. This is Ken Steele, and I'm in Hollywood, and I'm about to go into my other plantation situation. So, you know, wish me luck there. But before I do go, I wanted to mention that if you pay attention to LeBron James's statement, he said that racism will never go away. And I just want to caution victims of racism to be very mindful of that sentiment, because if you think that it's never going to go away, then you're less likely to work towards replacing it with a system of justice. So just, you know, be very mindful of when you have these moments where public figures are designated or allowed to speak about racism, white supremacy. There could be, I'm not sure if those words that LeBron James spoke were his sentiments. I think that they may be the sentiments that he was allowed to present in that setting. So just be very, very mindful. And also to Emmy, I would advise against approaching a male that was, I guess, fighting with a female to the point where I guess blood was drawn. I would just refrain from approaching that male under any circumstances. If you've been paying attention to the news, many of these males are going to the next level with violence when it comes to addressing situations where they are in dispute with females. So a person like that, you know, they're taking your popcorn and they're willing to violate your space in that manner. They're probably willing to go further with those violations. So I would advise, you know, keeping your distance and being very mindful of this particular victim's presence.
You know, thank you for that. Gus, can I go really quick? Do you mind?
Proceed.
Thank you. I think I forgot to mention, they weren't fighting. I agree with everything that you said, Mr. Steele. I just, while you were speaking, I think it came to me that I didn't mention exactly what it looked like it happened. It looked like he had like a scratch. It wasn't, you know, like a full-on domestic situation that I felt, you know, police maybe needed to get involved and someone needed to be separated. It was like, I don't know, might have tried to holler at somebody, she scratched him and they came back and argued, like, you know, something small. But I do agree. And I think, you know, proper code is anyway, just like, hey, you asked me for the napkin, that's what I got. Because if you wanted a Band-Aid, you would have asked me for a Band-Aid. And I could just leave it that simple. Like, don't do anything extra. But thank you.
Appreciate that, Emmy. Appreciate that. Other folks, anything they wanted to get in before we get ready to conclude? We have about 20 minutes left, unless everyone is all satisfied.
Can I be heard?
Yeah, yes, sir.
Yes, I've heard the conversation about the shenanigans that take place by whites on the job, and that's to be expected. That you know something racist we put up on the bulletin board based on something that actually took place maybe the night before, you know, that sort of thing. And as I've heard others say, that the white person, the white persons who does that, is expecting some sort of reaction from mainly, they're going to have a reaction from other white people, but mainly from a non-white person. They're like trying to inspire a reaction. And so don't give it to them. Just totally ignore it. Just totally ignore it, and eventually over time, they won't look forward to you, at least, into getting any type of reaction or anything on it. Like Mr. Fuller said, you got to be like, you got to be almost like a statue in a large sense. And even if somebody directly comes and asks you, you do what, you know, what Gus suggested, which is to say, well, I don't talk about that on the job. I'm here to be the best employee that I could be and help make the business better. You know, as simple as that. And eventually it'll leave you alone, you know, over time. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir. We can hear you.
Yes, greetings, Gus. Greetings to the callers and listeners. This is Jay calling from New York. Just wanted to reach out. I called in late, so I missed a lot of the show, but I definitely wanted to just kind of touch on something that I've been going through this week, probably for the last 6 to 7 months. I finally kind of reached out to, as I mentioned on one of the other shows, that I'm working on a project, a contract project right now, because as I mentioned, I'm also an entrepreneur and I have my own business, and doing this contract to kind of you know, get funds and things of that nature. So I mentioned on one of the calls maybe last year that my grandmother in Haiti had been sick. I think I had mentioned on a call as well that she had passed away in January. So to bring this back, my grandmother passed away while I was in the orientation program, the training program for this new position that I was in. So I didn't take any time away. Of course, because she was so far away, I didn't want to leave the position and, you know, take the trip and then try and come back. So I kind of dealt with it, didn't take any days away. It was a very difficult time for me and the family, but I didn't take any time off. So pushed through it, did well in this, quote unquote, training class. And then, as I mentioned on one of the other calls, I had a very close family member that went through that 20 plus hour surgery when the racist white supremacist went through that process of just taking advantage of her. And then she passed away just 2 weeks ago. So was dealing with that with the family. So all of it kind of came to a head last week, just emotionally beat down. And of course, being a little bit more informed and trying to kind of help family along through seeing the attacks that's happening on us and them just being totally oblivious to it. I felt like that also was pulling a lot of stress on me as well. So last week, I feel like I got to a point where I just wasn't feeling good. And I needed some time away. But of course, I didn't want to talk to this racist, possible white supremacist, that so-called my manager, in reference to something so personal, because as we always talk about, what our tragic situations are to them, you know, as he said, when I talked to him, you know, people lose cats and, you know, he's in the military. So he's telling me about, you know, when he had to take off because he got shot in the leg and just all the back and forth. So I finally had the conversation with him and just told him that, I don't know, I probably should have taken some time off with my grandmother when she passed away. I probably should have taken some time off, you know, when my close family member was ill and had to deal with that. And now I'm at a point right now where I just need to kind of, you know, mentally try and get things together, because I'm feeling like it's going to affect my, you know, my position or just my efforts. My code told me not to say anything because, as I've heard when I called in, you know, they put these things in a pocket and they just hold on to it. But I just thought of, you know, the great Dr. Frances Cress Welsing, and she said that we have to have, you know, Black mental health as well. And I just said to myself, you know, they'll go to get resources for their cat that passed away, and not to say anything about people who are close to their pets. But, you know, with the things that we're dealing with, I just felt like I had to go in and just kind of look to see if there were any other options. So I did. Of course, there weren't really any other options. They put me in touch with a couple of people from HR. I've worked in HR for the last close to two decades, so I know the routine. But, you know, I wanted to share because I know with everything that's happening, not just in the things that I went through with the passing of family members, but also just what's happening in the globe, in just the total aspect of what's happening to us. It's a lot. And sometimes we do need to pull away. So, you know, I just wanted to share, you know, it was against my code to speak to anybody about this. And now I have to go speak with more suspected white supremacists, you know, from the HR department, in reference to seeing if I could get some time off and things of that nature. But I just wanted to kind of share because, you know, during these last 8 to 9 months, you guys have become kind of part of my world of an outlet. You know, I just wanted to share and to say to anybody else that may be dealing with a lot, take some time because it definitely can kind of take a toll on everything that's happening with you physically and mentally. So that's all I have to say. I'll mute my line.
Ashe. And condolences again to you and your family for everything that you've been dealing with. I think that's at least the second time that I've heard in a week from a Black person where a family member died, like a grandparent or someone close, transitioned, and that just needing to get time from work, and then white people making it more difficult. But that's so important, just recognizing that you need to get that time to take care of your mental health, all the different stresses and abuse that we have to deal with in addition to the workplace. Do everything that you can to get that time. And even like I said, I just heard that from somebody else where they want a job and they were trying to get time and then white people making it difficult for them to do so. So yeah, extremely important point. Black mental health is critical. Dr. Welsing emphasized that. Always appreciate having her name mentioned, but she emphasized that frequently on this here broadcast. Black mental health, the job, and racists on the job do a lot to compromise our mental health as well. Other folks that are with us, did final comments they wanted to get in? We have about 10 minutes before we conclude.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Greetings to you, the host, the callers, and the listeners. I am also calling in late, but I did want to call in. Over the past maybe 2 weeks, 3 weeks, I've been I've been very concerned with some of my associates. They're in their particular field of business. Is street pharmacy, or they're dealing drugs. And one guy that I knew well, or I knew anyway, his cousin got murdered, you know, living in his house. And, you know, it makes all the other, all my other associates that are also selling drugs, it makes them all suspect. So now I, you know, I'm concerned as to how much I'm going to meet with them from now on, you know, because I have been meeting with a lot of people or a few people who were dealing drugs, you know, hoping maybe we could, you know, control what's going on. But obviously I can't control any of that. But it's really concerning, and it's stressing me out, you know, because this is the guy that was killed was somebody I was, you know, particularly working with. He wasn't even selling the drugs. He was in his cousin's house or, you know, whatever. And the guy who was selling the drugs, everybody was trying to figure out, you know, how is he selling this for so cheap? And then once the cousin gets killed, that guy goes out of business. And then, you know, another associate or a few other associates, then they get, you know, the whatever that product was for a similar price as the guy who now is out of business. So everybody's suspect. And so it's just, you know, to echo what Mr. Gus says, it's best to be sober, especially in this system. Yes, thank you.
Can I be heard real quick?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir, Mr. Steele.
My suggestion to the person that just called in, get new associates. Get out of that situation ASAP. Those situations rarely get better. And as I have mentioned on previous broadcasts, the racists are going into overdrive in terms of thwarting the plans of those victims who are engaging in some of these what they call street hustles and whatnot, some of these illegal activities. Also, if you are going to stay associated with those people, I would suggest that you suggest to them that they take any money that they have and put it into digital enterprises, because the street stuff that is old and you will get killed, and there's little upside to it. There are far more effective ways of procuring more coins and doing so, you know, I guess around some of the laws that the racists have set up. So if you are, my main thing is, please find new associates. But if you're going to stay associated with them, if you are somehow inextricably linked to them, encourage them to look into digital hustles, because this street stuff is it's way too hot in 2017. Way too hot.
Sobriety would be best. Absolutely. And yeah, that is certainly not that's definitely not one of those enterprises that you're going to be able to join and retire comfortably. I have not seen that at all since that was where we kind of started this whole conversation this evening. That is definitely not one, the street hustle or any facet of selling white people's narcotics. That is not going to be a long-term lucrative enterprise. Any final comments before we get ready to wrap? Last 5 minutes or so, folks have anything they want to get in? Anyone that we missed completely? I know some people did dial in or put a hand up closer to the end now. Did anybody that we missed completely? We got everybody. Spectacular. Any final comments folks need to get in before we conclude?
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
This is the Voice 305 again. I just wanted to leave everybody on this note that as these racists, it's getting more blatant and blatant. And as it gets more blatant and blatant with the racism we have to eliminate ourselves as much as possible from being out in the open. I know I used to be a person who used to be out in the clubs. I used to be riding, joyriding here and there. You know, just hanging with good people. I was always in good company. But you have to limit yourself, man. Even not even just racist, like even with just like going out, period, you know, with the way people are driving, you know, the texting and driving is getting outrageous. You just have to limit yourself. And especially with these racists, how they get so blatant. Just come home from work. Make sure your home is your oasis. Relax. Ease yourself. Read a book. And just wake up again for the next morning, because we really have to get into governing ourselves accordingly in order for us to survive, because it's getting real crazy out here. And that's all I want to leave you with.
Ashe. Any got time for a last comment? Last comment before we conclude? Everyone satisfied? I will assume folks are good. We will be here tomorrow. Final study session on Coretta Scott King, My Life, My Love, My Legacy, the autobiography of Coretta Scott King. All done. I'm thinking the next book, which we will be starting a week from tomorrow, of doing the autobiography of Gil Scott Heron, just because it would be symmetry. I am a big fan of autobiographies. We've done quite a few of them. It is a pretty good book. Minister of Information J.R. Valray was with us some years back. He recommended it. I think he said he was reading it at the time, but he highly recommended it. I've read half of it. It's great. When I say symmetry, it picks up with his effort to bring about the Martin Luther King holiday, which was a big part of Coretta Scott King's memoir. But he talks about that, and he also talks about his own childhood, growing up, how he got into doing music, and his thoughts on race, Dr. King, Malcolm X. I thought that would be a great follow. But if people have other suggestions, feel free. But either way, we're all done. Coretta Scott King, My Life, My Love, My Legacy, final session Friday, tomorrow, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. Saturday, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific, will be here for the compensatory call-in, dial-in. If you have commentary you would like to share, we'll catch up on what's gone down the last 7 days. Thanks to everyone who dialed in. Hope it was a constructive investment of your Thursday evening. Again, you can always email untiljustice@gmail.com. Sobriety would be best under conditions of white supremacy. I said that when I posted about Tiger Woods this week. Sobriety indeed. Race soldiers, they make our lives difficult in a variety of ways. Being intoxicated does not help in any way. With that, Creator, we ask that you help us remain patient with other black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of black self-respect at all times and all places, each and every time we are in contact with another black person. It has been time. Replace white supremacy with justice immediately. Context of White Supremacy, signing out. Thanks all for tuning in. Protect your popcorn.
Nigga, you so brainwashed.
I'm a victim, brother.
No problem. You're a victim.
Shut I'm a up. Victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my conditioning. Mm-hmm. Even my conditioning has been conditioned.